Hey, welcome to Glee Chat. This is episode 97, Mitch hosting this time around, and we're going to be recapping the very, very special episode 604, The Hurt Locker, Part 1. All right, so I don't know about y'all, but this probably is one of my least favorite episodes of the series. Gonna say that right off the bat. It was extremely difficult to get through. Caitlin, you said that you felt sick after watching it. Tell me more.
I felt nauseous and angry, so yeah. There's that.
Yeah,
you're curious about which parts made you feel most nauseous and which parts made you feel most angry, or a combination of the two, really.
I'll let you know as we go.
And I think right off the bat, like a certain clean shrine is definitely going to get us all riled up. And
Mitch, I think I'd forgotten about it. Like, I only watched it again just right now,
right.
And I think I'd repressed that. Until you mentioned it.
And you know what? Jesus. It's funny because I keep on making really relevant Hey Arnold references to Glee, I swear. And this one is like Helen Mataki's Hey Arnold shrine where she had like his chewed bubblegum and like his tissues.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And shit.
Oh,
like, oh God. Sue and Helga would have a great time. All right, so with that.
That's true. We should probably just say that John is not hosting this week because it's his actual birthday. So he's out for his actual birthday,
John.
Which is fair enough. So happy birthday, John. And he actually really wanted to be on this episode because I think he said he liked it, but maybe he like hate liked it. I don't know. Like one of them. He wanted to be on this episode anyway. But Jack is, I think, otherwise engaged, but John, it's his birthday, so happy birthday, John, but we didn't like this episode, so sorry about that.
Do you know how old he turned? I could probably guess at like, I don't know.
I think he's a year younger than me, so maybe 28 or 27.
I
don't know,
guess
one
28,
of them.
Yeah,
I think it's 28, but maybe he's 18. He's a spratly 18. We shouldn't talk about people's ages. They might be sensitive. I don't know. No, it's fine.
Imagine if he was on, he'd be like, oh, I am a young, glorious 16.
Can I just ask you this before we start, Mitch? Because I just need to be like mentally prepared for it at the moment in the show.
All right.
Did you know either of the songs done by Vocal Adrenaline before watching this episode?
I knew none of the songs of any of the performers this episode.
Wow. Okay. There's some that I expected, but okay, that's interesting.
I always do that.
Two,
no,
I was curious. No. I mean, like, had you heard them before?
Oh, yeah, of course. Absolutely. I heard every single song in this episode before.
Okay, so you knew all of the songs before.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant, like, that they were going to perform them. No, I knew them all really
well. You know how sometimes you don't know a song or you haven't heard of someone? I was curious because I was thinking, we'll get to it, but I was thinking about when they did Whip It. I was thinking about, like, all of the people watching this that didn't know anything, like, had never heard the song or saw the video before, and they would be like, "What? Why are they wearing that? What is happening?" I was just thinking about the
real good. Like, I haven't seen the video. Is that a thing?
Well, the red... We'll get to it, but the red things, like the red cone things are like, they didn't just go crazy and wear red cones, like it's in the video, it's very much a part of that. But I have a story about that, which we'll get to.
Okay, I think we have a lot to delve into, and hey guys, best part is, this was only a part one.
We get to keep up this pace next week.
There's more where this came from. All right, so let's keep in that mindset that we're not quite done with Sue's plot. So let's start off with where that came from. So Sue and Shu are having lunch at McKinley. Will just cries a lot and pisses off Sue by leaving a really conspicuous green fork. I caught that in the shop before they showed it, so I don't know. Was I supposed to? And then this starts her newfound hatred for Will, apparently, and I don't know, whatever, that's Sue. So, Caitlin, I know you don't like Will, but was this even justified?
I mean, I'm just going to say, Sue was like fandom stand-in in this episode, and the writers clearly know that we hate Will Schuster, and we hate every time he breathes, so giving Sue a stupid reason to hate him makes complete sense in this context.
Yeah, it was like, it was a little bit ridiculous that this was the thing that set her off, but it was like she was looking for an excuse to like refire her hatred that apparently never went away, like all of the times that, you know, we thought they were friends. She was just pretending, apparently. So, I don't know. I don't know if a fork is worthy of that.
No.
You know, but...
Any sane human being wouldn't think that a fork is worth anything but a fork. And it was weird, because, like, that almost went off into a plot where it was like, well, she makes... Will makes her clean up after his messes or something. Like, a larger overarching plot of that always being a thing. But that wasn't even it. You know, it was just weird, but Natalie.
No,
what
it was
saying?
Just meant to be like insane. But,
yeah, okay.
You know, she has lots of other valid reasons to hate him, but you know, which you know she says loudly. But no, this was dumb. I think it was meant to be dumb.
All right.
But yeah.
All right. As long as we're all on the same page here, like we'll go point by point and see where we lost it. Right. so then, I think this might be the point. Sue takes Becky to a storage facility. Where at first we see Wheels of Death with little voodoo dolls of the Glee Club members in a blatant note with the circled picture of the missing character Matt from season one. was this his reoccurring moment that Jack was looking for? Did it happen, or was the actor really coming on?
No, he is really coming back. Like, sorry, spoilers, but yeah, there is an episode in which he is, or at least he's on Instagram, he said so. Yeah,
well, I mean,
if he happened to follow the cast, apparently that's a thing.
Well, if you think about it, why else would they build up this? Why is he not on?
They've mentioned it a few times this season, I'm not gonna lie. Like, they are definitely trying to raise awareness to the fact that there was this character that was, like, never speaking and then left. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All right, so... Caitlin, I feel like you might have had a chance to look at this, and correct me if I'm wrong, that little chart she had was kind of interesting, too. It wasn't just, like, there was, like, Al Roker in this and something else. There was, like, a list of things that she just didn't like. Did you catch any of those little details?
I did not.
No. Yeah, I'm going to have to freeze frame.
I tried to get through this as quickly as possible.
Can't say I blame you. All right, and then, reading directly from the note that I took, things take a twist for the weird and fucking disgusting when Sue plays chords in an organ, opens up a serial killer-esque Clean worship center, and says, "Clean, I've been quietly shipping them since they first met." Sue wants them to get back together so that she could be a flower girl at their wedding. What the ever-living
fuck? The only part of this that I liked and I thought was, like, relatively clever was her being like, "Becky, wait in the car," because she didn't want Becky to see her Clean shame. like, I really loved that for some reason. But, oh my god, where to start? Where to start here? Don't fucking say shipping on television. Like, this isn't making me cool. Just saying. Sorry.
Yeah.
But, like... Like, I understand that, like, you know, fandom awareness and, like, you know, things about, like, the way that people, you know, even, like, you know, 5-10 years ago, like, entertainment sites wouldn't talk about, like, you know, ship of the week or, like, you know, have that kind of thing. And that's definitely a big part of, like, you know, recaps on entertainment websites, that kind of language. But sorry, I don't think that Sue would legitimately use that kind of language. And I'm like, is this meant to be, like, what is this? But even, it's just... How did she have pictures of them from private moments to, like what? Like,
right.
Again,
and it's, like, almost like, is this drone supposed to be a series-wide thing that she's been doing?
She's
and
been
we're just
having drone cameras the
and we're just now knowing it, right? Well, it kind of reminds me of what I first think of is, like, the little Beetle cameras in The Maze Runner. I think that she has those little things running around and, like, you know, one day someone's going to, like, pick one up and be like, what?
I think that, like, aside from the fact that the shrine is just makes me want to die anyway, I think that something that really bothered me about this episode is it kept flip-flopping between, like, asking you to suspend your disbelief, like, you know, the fact that she would have a cardboard cutout of, like, Clane's first kiss that she was definitely not there for, and the moments later on where it takes away the suspension of disbelief, and it you know, really, like, tries to make you kind of focus on stuff that, when you're watching it in the past, that you kind of just accepted because it's Glee, and it's, like, not... Like, for example, any time that they go anywhere in public and there's, like, musicians playing along for them, in my head, at least, those musicians weren't really there, if you know what I mean. Like, they're just there because they want to show that the music is being played authentically. It's not actually, you know, or that it's imagined. Saying, right? Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I know that they always had the band there and stuff, but they, like, it was just sort of, to me, it was just sort of like knowing that the orchestra is there when you watch a Broadway musical, if you know what I mean.
And, yeah, yeah. I mean, because we have so many fantasy sequences where the characters are just singing in their heads anyway, so
yeah.
How am I to the difference so, if between this
when
is...
When there's a band.
Yeah.
There's just so many moments in this episode that flip-flop around with the suspension of disbelief. Like, sorry, but, like, when Sam... Again, I'm jumping ahead, but when Sam hypnotizes... When Seuss hypnotizes Sam and she says to him, like, you know, piano, flatbed truck, let's sing a song together. And then we see them sing a song together and it cuts back to the choir room so that the flatbed truck was a fantasy, but Sam... But Sue told him to really do it. Like, this one's real. Like, I just... It really focused on so many things that were, like, polar opposite in whether you're meant to believe it or not, and I just hated it.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. Caitlin, it's important that I also think we get your notes on this Clane Worship Center. I think that you're probably, if I had to say, between you and Natalie, you might just be the one that hates Clane a little bit more, so... So tell me why. Tell me why you didn't. Did you like this moment?
Oh, it was so gross. Yeah. It was so gross. Yeah. But here's my thing that made me super uncomfortable about this episode, and this is what kind of starts it, is that this episode is very much Sue is fandom. The writers, like, went on to Tumblr and took posts from Tumblr and put them in Sue's mouth, and they took, like, the real extreme ends of fandom who are very creepy and put their words into Sue's mouth. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these are all the blogs that I avoid when I am on Tumblr and my blacklist does not work on the TV. Go away.
Why would I want to see them on TV?
Exactly. So it was just, like, I don't like that they are, even if they're making fun of it, which I assume they are intending to, it just, they're giving it a sense of legitimacy by even addressing it and giving them a voice to an authority figure in the show, and I just don't give that a voice, period. And it just drove me up the wall.
Because that's a dangerous part of fandom that has
very derived thoughts. This is coming from someone in the Supernatural fandom who we had a episode this season called Fan Fiction. So if this is drawing the line for someone who likes Supernatural, that is telling you something.
Well, I get the impression that Supernatural wouldn't go to the extent of breaking this much of a fourth fucking wall to go back and show moments that character wasn't at. Like, it stays within its own reality, as we often go about on Glee Chat, that when Glee doesn't follow its own reality and writes in things that could not have possibly happened because this person was there while this thing was happening, right? You know, it really throws me for a loop, and I think that may be, like I was saying, Caitlin, why perhaps you like Supernatural more, isn't it?
Ooh. They sort of do and sort of don't.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, like, they show that they are very much aware of fandom, and they have created a character for fandom in the show.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
but, this was past that comfort level. It was way too much.
And there was just so much. There was so much. Like, it was not like these little comments spread out throughout the whole season or the whole series, so much in this episode that I'm just like, do you guys think you're being clever? Like, is this meant to be, like, some sort of, like, oh, ho, 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 everyone will love this or whatever? Like, it's so bad and too much and just not okay.
It's just, like, every time Glee breaks the fourth wall now, I lose more and more respect that I used to have for it, because it used to never. It wouldn't dare. And then it did a lot. And then it never stopped. And it just, it's like, it's kind of like an insolent little child who thinks that they're hilarious about, like, a joke. So they'll pull it once and they'll see someone laugh at them, right? And then they think it's funny to do it, like, five more times in a row. And you're just like, okay, kid, really stop. And the Glee does it, like, 500 more times past that.
Yeah. It's like, even little things like Sue being, like, I totally agree with what Caitlin is saying about, like, the sort of the fandom voice that, you know, that Sue was using and all of that kind of thing. But even other little things for me, like the moment where, you know, she's talking to Kurt or Rachel, I can't even remember, who cares. But she was just like, you know, so I can bring down the Glee Club once and for all. And she's like, oh, I said that out loud. I should have said it in my voiceover. It's like, no, you don't know that you have a voiceover. I know that you're crazy, so it's different. And you can quote-unquote get away with it with Sue. But they don't know that they have voiceovers. Like, they tried that once in season one where they're like, oh, we're even fighting in our voiceovers. And then they never mentioned it again. It's not like Community where it's, like, self-aware or, like, something like that.
Right.
We're not reading a fucking issue of Deadpool where the character knows he's in a comic and addresses the audience. Like, Glee has never had that perspective. Like, Glee has never had that aspect of knowing it's a show, if you know what I mean. Like, it doesn't know that it has, the characters don't know they have voiceovers. Like, it's not a consistent thing. You can't just, like, make it a thing. Move on, because there's so much of that in, like, her big rant to Will, even though she had many valid points in that as well.
There will be, and I think it's important to note what I want to say here, that I remember a really specific post on that awesome page, Humans of New York, and then, you know, it kind of talks about relationships and stuff in life. And then one of them was of a son who kind of, like, consistently did his mother wrong, wasn't nice to her, and he said, then she just stopped caring, and that hurt the most. That's how I feel toward Glee. It's like, you can do me wrong so many times, and when I stop caring, that's when it starts to hurt you, because I do not care what the plots are. It's come to the point where I find myself not wanting to become upset when Sue breaks the fourth wall X amount of times, because it just doesn't matter anymore. It's like shit's at the fan, and there's no helping it anymore. This train's on its final track, and it's going off the rails so hard that I can't even try and care, and that's sad. And I didn't ever want to get to that point, but this episode got me to that point. I need my faith restored. Oh God, by the Hurt Locker point part two, and I really hope that can happen. So yeah, then also Sue in her like five plots that she somehow has going on all at the same time, because that's a thing. She's invited the Warblers and Vocal Adrenaline for, quote, an invitational, something we've never really done before in Glee chat. Glee, I should say. That's happening soon at McKinley, and it's not going to be competitive, per se, because there aren't going to be judges, there won't be winners. But Rachel still asks Will to throw the performance for Vocal Adrenaline as to not puncture the charisma of the New Directions. She's kind of going on about how much it changed Will's life, and then, you know, saying that she needs to build up her group still. And I'm like, girl, when sectionals is coming? And then Sue captures this exchange on video via drone. All right. So, yeah, Caitlin, do you think she's ever going to get her group first off? I mean, yes, but, like, when? Because I'm assuming invitationals has to take place sometime close to sectionals, yeah?
Well, they have a very limited episode run, so they're going to have to push a lot of the competitions close to each other. So
yeah.
Think so. Here's what I don't get here with what? Rachel. Like, this last episode, she was, like, praising Kurt for being rough on the New Directions because they said that they wanted to be pushed. And then she goes and asks Will to throw the competition. Like, isn't that doing the exact opposite of what they told you they wanted?
You would think.
Yeah. Do you think Rachel actually cares about these kids, though?
What does Rachel care about? Why?
Did any of them even have a line? Did any of them even have, like, a line in this episode? Like, do they have any meaning?
Jane had her locker moment.
I mean, like, the way Rachel was with Jane when Blaine brought Jane to her, like, that was a really genuine, sweet teaching moment. So I really do think she does care. But she just has kind of a screwed up way of going about dealing with it.
Right. But Natalie, I think you're referencing too the fact that it's very, very obvious that our new Muppet Babies, or whatever fandom's calling them by this point, because I'm sure they have a name, that they're not doing anything and they're just there. and it's silly to introduce them this late in the game just to even not do anything with them, like on a twofold
bit. Well, they're props. They're basically props for Rachel and Kurt's plot of being Glee Club teachers. Like, you know, especially if they end up getting a full club to go to competition, do you really think they were going to get to know, like, all 12, you know, new kids? Like, I don't. Like, I think it'll be, like, the last episode that they'll just be like, oh, more people want to join, yay, the Glee Club will continue on, probably Will Schuster will come back, because, like, none of his kids care about him, so, like, in Vocal Adrenaline, which is amazing, but, yeah.
Hey, you know, there's a moment here, well, I wanted to say, first off, Natalie, that, You made me question, are we even going to get to nationals at this point? Highly unlikely.
Not nationals, but even sectionals. Like,
right. No, I mean, that can barely fit in this plot already. But also, that this episode overall, it almost started to feel like the cinematography of American Horror Story to me. And I used to be a big fan of American Horror Story until that show fell to shit. Like, not as bad as Glee. But there were moments, and there was a moment right here when Rachel and Will are walking behind stage as a long shot. It's kind of uncharacteristic of Glee to do such a long tracking shot. I just kind of stuck out like a sore thumb to me. And then, you know, as we're going into kind of what Kurt's going to be doing, there's kind of another horror-like plot coming on. I have bad inclinations coming on, especially once again, because this is a two-parter episode, that something's fishy, because it felt different. This was not... I know we're also saying this wasn't a normal Glee episode because there were, you know, really, really, really fantastical fourth wall breaking moments. But I sensed it. I felt it. This wasn't as comedic as it used to be anymore. It was taking a weird, I want to say darker tone, but it just felt like freaking horror to me. It was weird. I don't know how to explain it other than it was a feeling. So, I mean, we'll see if that comes to fruition. It could just be, you know, making that up. But did anyone else feel anything like that at all? Or am I just... on my own here.
I don't know. Like, a lot of it was really just... It didn't work. I just think it didn't work, basically. Like, I don't know. No, I can't. Just move on.
Natalie is speechless with how horrible it was.
Yes. If anything, the horror is just how horrible it is, yeah. Okay, so here we go. Yeah, Sue just goes up to Sam, and she has a plan. Don't know why, don't know where this came from, it's alright. She goes, Sam, I'm going to say these series of words, piano, flatbed truck, let's do a song. When you hear these words, you will be overwhelmed with love for one Rachel Berry. You will kiss her, and the instant you do, you'll wake up and will not remember anything. Whoa, okay.
Wow.
All right, guys. Is there anything to say here?
I'm so upset about this. Oh my god.
Why,
all of the number one, all of these hypnotism scenes look tacky and cheap. It looks like a Nickelodeon like live action teen show from the 90s.
Like, for real.
Like, it's terrible, but Caitlin, I'm pretty sure that you have some sort of emotional objection to using Sam like this, and I'm very interested to hear it.
Okay, just first on a general note, I'm like, as someone who was into Samchel last season, like, I'm sort of offended that they feel the need that there's no genuine chemistry there, and they need to use hypnotism to even bring it up. I'm like, okay, slightly offended because I was totally into that. But then, mostly, I'm done with Sue. I can't deal with her because Rachel is just... she needs to be handled very carefully right now, or her heart does, because her last love, her one-time fiancé, died.
Right.
That was traumatizing for her. And this thing with Sam, like, she asks him out, like, this is the first person she has wanted to date, and he is very safe for her. He's the first person she's been interested in since Finn died. And just the fact that it is... being used in this really cheap, horrible way is just, I cannot deal with it. It's really despicable and unforgivable, and I cannot deal with Sue anymore.
I know, and it brings back to mind two specific moments from the last season. One was, of course, I think the one you were referencing. I believe it was the only Samchel scene where he's modeling and she kind of oils him up, right? Is that the big moment, I think?
I think that was season four, but it was the first moment I sort of vibed it as well.
Yeah. Right, but I don't know if they had anything major past that. It was kind of just like they blew it all off randomly, and I was like, I mean, I ship it, but why did you stop? You know, because that, like you're saying, Caitlin, it's such a big deal after, you know, Finn had passed for her to move on carefully, right? And then she has this whole speech also, which I am 90% sure is in season five with Mercedes in that episode that Mercedes wants to know whether or not she should give up her virginity for Sam. And she was talking about how long it's going to take Rachel herself to move on from Finn. So, yeah, like, Glee set it up in all the ways you're talking, Caitlin, to make this such a big deal, to make that Sam was her first interest and that she was going to wait a while to move on from Finn. And then they do this, and it's just horrible. It kind of just, like, rips your heart out and stomps on it and says, hey, sorry, well, like, we're going to give Finn the quick little shout-out when Will sees his little picture in the back, but then again, we're going to forget about him ever existing and just, you know, break Rachel's heart for no apparent reason.
And it just says that Sue, like, any time that they have tried to be like, oh, but she has a soft heart underneath, like, no, this is despicable, and it is not something she can come back from, I don't think.
No,
and they've definitely made a big deal now, like, with everything she said in this episode, like, Will aside, like, you know, like, Sam, and not even just with Sam, like, with what she said about Will, it's like every time she's had a soft heart has just been retconned, basically. She literally said all of those times it wasn't real, if you know what I mean. So it's like they've, you know, chosen their stand on Sue, and that's what they're gonna have, if you know what I mean. They're gonna make her that, you know, that's how she is now. There's no more flip-flopping. We're just flopping to bad. And I've,
how horrible. Yeah.
No.
And it makes me think back to moments like everything with her sister and Sue's sister. And then, of course, her funeral and just how touching that was and how much I believed in that. And I feel like a big slap in the face because, yeah, you're right. Like, they flopped back to evil completely. There's no redeeming quality to Sue in my eyes. And it's not even that she's doing this in a weird comedic sense that is just like, haha, I guess some people could find that funny. It's like, no, yeah, Caitlin, you've opened up my eyes that, you know, this is a big, like, punch in the face to Rachel, and it's just, yeah, not good.
Specifically, this type of manipulation with Rachel's specific past, it's just, it's beyond unforgivable.
It's like, don't you feel like Rachel's lost enough? Seriously, like,
for real, everything that is going on against her this season, it's awful.
Yeah.
And Sue's reaction to Finn's death as well, like, you know...
Right, wasn't it the jacket thing?
Well, and just her breaking down, being like, I hate that he died, thinking, like, I hated him, I was looking forward to teaching with him. Like, she was the one that broke down and cried in the meeting of, like, the teachers dealing with Finn's death. And so, like, what? Like, just...
It's horrible. Yeah, it's very bad, and it does a great disservice to Finn, I think we can all say. And it's depressing. It's sad. But there's, kind of a funner, more fun scene. Is funner a word? No, definitely not. Then Rachel is then talking to Blaine, and she asks him to throw the invitational. He's kind of keeping up this really competitive stance against New Directions right now because of the whole Jane fiasco. I heard a sigh, so I won't move on from there. I'll go on to Caitlin, I think that was.
That was Natalie.
No, it was me. It was me. I'm just sighing about this entire situation. And yeah. What's to come. Don't worry, carry on.
Okay, and then in the same breath, like, in a moment that I can't say I was really that big of a fan of Darren's acting, he kind of just picks up his phone and is like, there's an intruder in the house, OMG. And they all go to...
It was bad. The whole thing was bad.
It was weird. Like, it wasn't... Like, Darren and Blaine were just weird, if I can separate those two. It was just... Yeah, it tasted odd. Then, it turns out that there's a bear. There's a real-life bear in Karofsky's bed. Like, he's freaking out, and then it just... What?
Can I just say that this scene completely won me over on Karofsky? Like,
oh, that was cute. Yeah.
on the chair, like high-pitched squealing, so upset.
I loved it when you can't even see him and they just go into the room and Blaine's like, why is there a bear in our apartment? And Grovsky kind of sarcastically but still panicking, he's like, why is there a bear in our apartment? I died a little bit.
Well, it would have been funnier. Like, I was expecting a mouse. I really was. With the, like, the tone of this episode and how just, like out there it was. But then I guess it's even more out there to have, like, a real-life bear on set. I remember there being a picture. I remember, like, there was a cast photo.
I knew there was a bear coming, but I think I forgot. Like, if you know what I mean. Like, I saw a picture of the bear, and I think I repressed the bear. So, yeah, I was quite, like, what the hell?
I don't know. I mean, is that really outside of Glee's normal fantasticism? I don't know what word I'm trying to say there.
Fanaticism.
Or is that something that only this episode could even try and get away with?
No, I feel like for Sue, I feel like it's something that Sue could have done in any episode, honestly. Yeah, I feel like she has the hookups to get, you know, a sabotage bear at any moment. Like,
even though Lima doesn't have a zoo.
I was thinking that as well. Like, Sue got a bear, whereas the others, like, couldn't break out their tigers and shit for the zoo to do Katy Perry's Roar. Like, so bad.
How'd they get the bear out? Did they call animal control, I'm assuming? I guess that's what you would do in that situation. I don't know.
We don't have problems in Australia. We don't have freaking bears around.
Why would you call your boyfriend? No, not even call. Text. Just a text. And just say, like, there's an intruder. That's not just an intruder. That's a wild animal. I don't understand.
That, like, his voice would rile it up or something.
I know.
Yeah.
But, like, I would say there's a bear in the apartment. I called 911. I wouldn't, that's just so weird. I would handle it very differently.
He might not have believed it. Like, I'd just be like, what? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I know. It depends on their relationship. We kind of get a taste later on of what's going on with Krofsky and Blaine and how they vibe. And it works for maybe just about 10 seconds before it all falls to shit. But I wonder if Blaine would believe Krofsky if he really just wrote, you know, like, there's a bear in our apartment. I'm panicking. I called 911. It's going to kill me, you know?
I don't think that it's more he would think it was a lie or anything, but, like, you know, maybe Kurovsky didn't know what it was when he texted. Maybe he's just like, there's something in the apartment.
Oh.
And then he discovered that it was a bear. He opened the door after he'd sent the text and was like, it's a fucking bear. I don't understand why all of them went to Kurovsky and Blaine's house.
Especially Kurt. Like, why would Kurt go in that apartment?
Why were they there? Like, maybe they needed, like, strength in numbers. Did they just leave all the kids there? Like, none of them made sense. Like,
that's all right.
None of it made sense.
They're already getting neglected, so you might as well add on more. And then Kurt goes over to Sue's office and is just like, okay, Klain's not going to be a thing ever. Stop. And, I mean, I don't really get why she put the bear in the first place. Is it to be like, Krofsky likes bears, therefore if I put a bear in there, he'll cheat on Kurt? Kind of thing? Weird.
Yes, I think what the show was trying to say was that Sue heard that Kurovsky likes bears, so attracted to bears, so she was supplying with him a bear instead of Blaine. Like, and then they were trying to make a literal assumption that Sue did not know, like, the gay lingo for bears. And I find this hard to believe, and I would have liked it a lot better if it was, like, that it was just causing random mischief. But I'm pretty sure what the show wants you to believe is that Kurovsky doesn't, like, that Sue didn't know what a bear was in terms of gay lingo, which, whatever.
Right.
So, okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Natalie, it seems like you knew what the term meant, and then Caitlin, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so
literally everyone, like, I don't know a single person, except maybe my dad, that wouldn't know what that meant, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And as far as, I mean, that's Australian culture, and I think American culture fits that too, that bear would be a common term, so I guess that was just, I mean, Sue was smart, and then she wasn't smart, I don't know, it's just weird. Yeah, just... There's not even a consistency in her character in this episode. Not even within No, yeah, so that's just weird.
It would have been funnier if she knew and then still sent the bear cub.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted it to be, but no. Apparently.
Like, there's this little thing called Google, you know? I mean, I'm not sure you actually want to Google the term gay bear, but, I mean, you would get your answer.
I feel like if Jack was on, he would be able to reference a past episode where Sue has actually used the term bear in the correct terminology that we're talking about, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
but,
I know. Where's Jack when you need him, right? Yeah, anyway, I really do feel like amongst all of her rants, she must have said that by now. But yeah,
Yeah.
And then Kurt reveals, and it was kind of led up to a little bit, that Walter is a man that Kurt's going on a date with. He's met him online, and Sue says that this Walter is going to be a serial killer cannibalist, and he will eat porcelain, because even if she was on an island, not even an island, even if she was just walking about life, she would look at that supple porcelain meat and chow down. And I'm like, okay, so Sue's a cannibal, and why doesn't she get with Walter at this point if she believes him so? So it just...
She is being the creepy Kurt segment of fandom.
Yeah, that's the thing. I usually love the Kurt and Sue interactions, and someone messaged me on Twitter being like, oh my god, this is so terrible, but at least you get lots of that Kurt and Sue dynamic that you love. And I was just like, but this is just appalling. Like, it's just, oh.
She would eat him. She would eat him. If someone told me that they would eat me, I would have them fucking arrested. I do not understand the hesitance of people in this TV show of dialing on their phones 911. I really don't. I really don't. Sue should be in jail twice over already. Not that it's ever, mused in the show, because she just, nearly murders students on a daily basis, and that's just okay. And she will do that later on coming up, and it's an interesting one that she does this time around, the type of abuse. All right, so yeah, there's going to be a date with Walter, and do you guys want to save our conversations for maybe tell me at least, Caitlin, what you thought this thing with Walter was going to be before it happened. Did you have any anticipations of good or bad either way?
Well, I knew from spoilers that there was going to be an older guy involved.
Oh, okay. And Natalie, you probably knew it in the same breath.
Like I'd heard that, but I didn't remember till I saw him. I thought, oh, okay. It's because I saw you tweeting about, what's his face, Eccles. I don't know Veronica Mars well enough to know who that was. I just know that there's someone else, Eccles. So I thought maybe it was his brother. And I'm like, oh, so it'll be like a hot young guy, if you know what I mean. Like I didn't think that it was going to be an older man. But when I saw him, I was like, oh, yeah, I actually do remember reading about this. So, yeah, at first I was just like, oh, okay, could be interesting. Could be a legitimate, choice to move on, etc. Okay, good. So I was hopeful at first.
Well, I mean, yeah, I kind of was too. And I thought this really could have been something great for Kurt, because he hasn't had a successful date. And I wish that he would have at least given that one guy a chance when he was having those weird flashbacks to the breakup that he had with Blaine most recently. That one. It just sucks that Kurt wasn't trying to move on. And I wish we knew the timeline. I wish we knew how long they've been broken up, because I wanted to know if I can justify or not. Whether I believe in Kurt's situation in that amount of time, he would be ready to move on from Blaine and to date again. I don't know, because it's it's weird, because how long do you know someone, and not even out of convenience, like you were saying, Natalie, but how long do you know someone when you move in with them because you want to? So this makes me feel like Blaine's been broken up for at least a year? Is that too outlandish to say?
And that Kurt, I would say 6 months to a year at this point.
So then Blainovsky dated... I mean, I feel like I'm talking about a pregnancy. Blainovsky dated a month after that breakup or something, and now they moved in a month ago? I don't know.
We don't know.
No, I know. And I wish I did, because I think I'd have a stronger opinion on what was going on with Kurt's feelings in this episode if I knew a timeline. And that kind of sucks that we don't, because I think they were meant to feel that Clayne is the crux of the drama of this season, because it was the opening. And then, Rachel's almost feels like a side category to it now, oddly enough. But
I think we're meant to feel things that they're not getting across quite right.
How do you mean?
Well, that we've all expressed our fatigue with the Klain storyline, for instance. Right. And but the writers clearly are moving toward that reconciliation.
Yeah, they clearly think that it's what people want, or maybe it's just what they want. I don't know. Like, they should be writing the story they want to tell, first and foremost. Like, let's just put that out there.
That ship's already sailed, Natalie. That's been dead and gone since the first 13.
Like, do they? Who knows? But I don't know who they think wants this, but they're definitely trying to show other attempts at relationships as a joke or unsuccessful, if you know what I mean. But yeah. I'm not. Like, as much as I don't think that we've seen anything of Blaine and Kurovsky, like, to say, oh, yeah, they're so good together, I don't particularly think it's a joke either, unless you're the kind of person that looks at Kurovsky and sees him as a joke character, which I don't. So I don't really get that.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd because Kurovsky... Caitlin, I'm thinking of our Twitter discussion about who's a lead, who's a main, who's a supporting, and all that. And anyone who's interested can probably go stalk us and find that stuff. But it's funny that I find Kurovsky to be one of the most developed and changed characters. What with his original bullying, then kissing Kurt, then his attempted suicide, and now his being more adult and going after Kurt, and then going after Blaine, and then now dating Blaine. Like, he's moved so much more than a lot of the characters in the show. So I don't see how anyone could take him as a joke character, because he's just done so much and he's brought us through such an emotional turmoil. So it's funny. It's not like I know whether or not I could say I want Blaine Kurovsky endgame. But I don't know if I don't, because we're still in the dark about it. And as far as Kurovsky is considered, I mean, I do believe he's changed enough from what I'm seeing of him. And as horrible as he was before, I think he had that big life-changing moment, during whatever regionals episode that was, that has made me feel more favorable to him, because that showed a nice vulnerable side to him and all. So then Blaine agrees to give Rachel and Sam some piano lessons, because I don't know if this is just meant to be kind of like in Harry Potter, where the Imperius Curse can make someone follow either your beckoning or your direct orders. So I think this is part of Sue's beckoning, that she just wants Sam in some facet to kind of draw Rachel in, right? Because she never told Sam... do piano lessons with Rachel. So I'm just really confused as to why that was the thing that happened. But I'm pretty sure, wasn't it Sam that was like, hey, Rachel, let's go do piano lessons. Does that sound fun? Like, out of nowhere? Or am I missing
Rachel something? Was talking about piano and
not Sam having like, anything in her.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Sam was like, oh, I could ask Blaine.
Right. Then Rachel and Sam go on a friend date at Breadsticks, which is a hot set piece this episode, because we go to it 3 times on dates, matter of fact. And Rachel notes that they don't consider it a date themselves, but she finds it very nice to be alone with a guy for the first time in a while. Hashtag Sue you bitch. And that's funny that I say
Kurt,
that.
I guess Kurt doesn't count as a guy, but I mean, I knew what she meant, but like...
Like a romantic-y kind of, we're interested in each other, but we're just feeling each other out kind of deal.
Yeah.
Unless you're of the ships that's, I'm sure we've talked about before, are Rachel and Kurt. I don't know how I feel about that ever, but... so...
I just found her phrasing slightly odd, because... Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, carry on.
Yeah, because she's been with... Yeah, you're right. Okay.
I knew what she meant, but carry on.
Yeah, right. And then, at the first piano lesson... I don't know why, but Sue decides she wants to interrupt it, even though that's part of her plan to make Sam fall in love with Rachel. So, like I was talking about her not being consistent in the episode for what her goals were, she does that right there. Does anyone have an explanation for why in the hell she would have interrupted the piano lesson at all? Natalie?
No.
Okay.
Caitlin?
Because she's Sue?
It's just... But it goes against the goal of making Sam fall in love with Rachel, because they're not spending time with each other. And it just... It's so stupid. It just...
I don't know.
Is it so that they can give her the song? Because they do. And they... And I have a point to make about what I'm sure you guys see in the doc as me crossing out Bitch by Alanis Morissette to Meredith Brooks. I was dead convinced, as was a lot of the internet on Google, that Alanis Morissette sing this song. Mm-hmm. I found an interview from, your post or something that was with Meredith Brooks, and she was like, I'm just sick of people thinking that I'm Alanis Morissette's set. It was great.
It came out at very similar time to right. Alanis being big, and she has a pretty similar voice. I definitely remember this song being, like, around in, like, the late 90s, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and I definitely, you know, I get how people kind of made that automatic mistake, but it was kind of a one-hit wonder Alanis style song at a time when Alanis was really big, so yeah, she kind of, yeah.
Well, it sounds just like her, if you ask me. I can't hear the difference because my ear's not expertly tuned to find the difference between those two. Jack ripped me a new one because I ripped him and I was like, are they seriously doing another Alanis song? And he's like, Mitch, you're on crack. That's not Alanis. Look it up. And I did, and I was like, Jack, look, there are all of these like lyric websites quoting Alanis Morissette as being the artist of the song. He's like,
that is so bad.
I know. And then I had to go on Wikipedia, like, literally to find out the artist of the song. Like, that never has happened to me. Ever. Caitlin, did you know that this was Meredith Brooks to go into it?
I did not.
Did you know who it was at all?
I assumed it was an Alanis song, too, but I'm not a huge
right.
Alanis person, so it just kind of not my interest level.
Yeah.
Well, it was already pretty odd that Uninvited happened and then the Linus episode happened. And it reminded me of another moment, Natalie, way back when Ugly Chat. I like to say it was around, like, oh God, like season two. And they were doing something like a lot of Rihanna songs. And we came to the conclusion that they just, like, got the rights to the songs and we're going to sprinkle them in the next four episodes or somewhat to make it, like, not as obvious that that's what they were doing. I thought that's the moment here, but I'm glad it wasn't. So, yeah, I said that.
Yeah.
I
mean, they did have the Alanis song in the first episode.
Right.
And then the third episode, like, but...
right.
But, yeah, no, this is definitely, you know... Yeah, this woman released this song that sounds very similar in both, like, voice and lyrics, like, attitude to, like, Alanis' Jagged Little Pill, which came out at the same time as this song. So, yeah, she kind of dug herself into a little bit of a hole with that, but, yeah.
Well, you would think, but, I mean... to believe the interview or not that I read. I'll have to link that in the show notes so people can see what I'm talking about. But Meredith Brooks said that she'd never heard of Alanis when she sang this song, when she made the song, I should say. But, and then again, though, it's not like you
really?
Can help. Well, really? I don't know. She said she made it 2 years prior to when it released. So if you go back in time, that was about the time that Jagged Little Pill released, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, Jagged Little Pill, sorry, just to be really specific on the internet, maybe when she wrote the song, but okay, the Bitch by Meredith Brooks released in May 1997. I think Jagged Little Pill is like released in 1995, and it was the biggest album of the year by far. Like, it won like Grammys, it was really big. And so I can't believe that for 2 years she didn't hear, like, of Alanis Morissette in the, like, mid-90s. Like, it just seems unlikely, but...
And you know what the best part is? She goes, she's like, I can't even hear the likeness between my voice and hers. And like, I'm like, okay. Like, I bought that maybe you hadn't heard of her when you wrote the song. But you had to recognize, or someone in your record label had to have been like, we have a hit just because she sounds like Alanis. Like, someone was cued in here.
That's obviously what it was. Like, she's just... It's fine. Just carry on.
Yeah, totally. Really. Well, I mean... Yeah.
Speaking of the piano lesson, can I just bring up Blaine?
Yeah.
Being, like, aggressive classical music at Sam and Rachel, and then being, like, really nasty to Rachel. I was like, dude is still pissed.
Yeah, is he going to let go of Jane drama, or is he going to keep that going on with Rachel for a bit?
I don't think it's just Jane drama. Yeah. I think it's, like... the fact that he's had to put up with these people for, like, years, and none of them ever give him a, like, fair go as an actual friend. I mean, I suppose Sam does, but, like, you know, he was just, like, Kurt's accessory for so long that he, like, gave up everything to be Kurt's accessory, and now he's not, and these people are still dragging him back into their drama when he's trying to get the hell away from them.
Well, and also, like, when Rachel comes back, Blaine reaches out to her and is like, we're going to do this together. And then the Jane situation happens. So it very much seems like Rachel has stabbed him in the back after he has been, like,
right.
reaching out to be there for her.
No, it's you and me against the world, etc. Yeah. We're going to get our lives back together.
So even though it wasn't Rachel's fault, it makes sense that it appears that way to Blaine. So it totally makes sense that he's still pissed about it.
Well, I mean, couldn't this all just been solved very simply by Rachel going, "Hey, Blaine, I know you're really excited about Jane. Let me know what you're doing right now, because I know it's so important to you. And if you really want to keep fighting for her, go ahead. She told me she wanted to come to our school. I'm not going to steal her from you, but you need to tell me what you're comfortable with." Rather than
someone should have told him, essentially.
Right. Rather than just
during
like,
the process.
"Oh, she's mine. Cool. Well, I really don't care what else you're doing because you came to me, so there's no drama involved." And Rachel's acting like she's so innocent in this situation, so I'm kind of happy Blaine's holding it against her. Because you're right. She did backstab him, Natalie, so. Yeah, that was.
I think Blaine needs to toughen up. Yeah, like I like that he's sort of toughening up a bit, and like that
he had a backbone in this episode.
Oh,
throwing sass left and right.
Yeah, and I like that. I love him being like, "My loyalty's to them," like with the warblers and stuff. Like,
right.
As well, like, you know, and just his attitude, because unlike Mr. Schuster, who is an easier target, being like, "New directions is everything." When the hell is Blaine going to be like, "New directions is everything, it changed my life"? Like, he was perfectly happy and believed strongly in the warblers. And as we said, he only left that to be like Kurt's like accessory for a year until Kurt left, and then Blaine was stuck in this other school. Anyway, yeah, I like that he's just like, "No, this is what I originally wanted. This is what I'm getting back to. I'm making up for it." Like, I feel like in the same way that, like, he was allegedly, like, making up for, like, running away from his first, like, public school by moving to McKinley, or, like, the way that Kurt, like, convinced him to or whatever, that he's now making up for, like, leaving Dalton sort of against his will by, like, putting in a really good effort there with a new generation. I don't know. I'm still so mad about that transfer, and I'll never be over it. So, yeah, anyway.
You and any sane fandom member should be, because it was not healthy. It wasn't healthy for Klain, it wasn't healthy for Blaine particularly, and it wasn't healthy for the dynamics of New Directions, because, and Caitlin, you're always, you know, quick to point out that Blaine is Rachel, Rachel is Blaine, so put them together, what are you going to get? Someone's going to be, you know, stomped down and not showcased in the way they deserve to be, I suppose, if you want to put it that way. So, yeah, it's just Blaine's had a sad storyline, and if we're still on this whole Roseanne kick that, you know, he's the one writing the show, he definitely might be, because he's starting to get back into his wants, his needs, and treating his character right.
anyway, back to the bit.
Yeah, so there's
Brooks, allegedly. I don't know, man. It was dumb.
It was dumb, and Sue's spraying kids with a fire extinguisher. I don't know if I should even try and be surprised anymore. I don't know in what fantasy or whatever Rachel would find it okay for a severed head to be singing to her in her desk. Nor maybe Jane's was kind of like, you know, she's standing up in between two lockers or somewhat. But it was just weird, right? You know, it was like, it was a bit macabre to find just like a head singing in your desk, and Rachel's just like, "That pesky Sue doing it again." And I was like, "No, that's so she beheaded herself and is singing to you from your desk drawer." It was just fucked
up. I mean,
up.
I assume it was meant to be all sorts of like fantasy, but like,
oh, yeah,
I
totally.
Don't know, like her throwing the kids around, it just, it's like, yeah, are you proud? Like, and it's not exactly the message of that song either. Like, the message of that song is that someone is labeling someone as a bitch, but that's not all they are, if you know what I mean. Like, it just happens to be the title. It's like they've gone with the episode, like, what, the title of the song, but it's not actually the message of what that song is that she's singing.
Yeah.
So,
well, we're kind of back to that moment, too, where Glee will, like, the title of a song in particular for what it does just for, like, I don't know, on paper, but then when you actually sing it and you actually perform it and you try and like choreograph it to make sense for that character, it doesn't. So that's a lot of where bitch fit. Caitlin, do you have bitch fit? Caitlin, do you have any thoughts about this not Alanis Morissette song?
I mean, you can look at it as potentially being purposefully ironic that she is taking the message the wrong way, or that she thinks that the message applies to her when we as the audience know it doesn't.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, are we meant to believe that it's like, oh, this isn't all I am? Like, we're meant to be getting a clue? Or is this meant to be, like, validating her point as, like, a multifaceted character? Or is, or are we meant to, like, just be taking it for the title? Like,
I don't think we're ever going to know. That's it. I don't think we're ever going to know the outcome of that Becky stuff with her boyfriend, and this is another thing I'm going to tack up in the last season that will just never really be cleaned up. It'll be left in the air whether or not Sue thinks she's a bitch, knows she's a bitch, is a bitch, is nice, is good, or what. I don't know. I can't keep up with the roller coaster. Or to quote a line that I know you guys are both going to groan at, your mood swings are giving me whiplash. But they are. They really are, Sue. You got to calm it down over here. All right, so this is our second time at Breadsticks. Blaine is having a date with Krofsky. He's interrupted as the entire restaurant of Krofsky's exes recognizes Krofsky. They're all big, burly men and assumedly of the type that Krofsky used to go for. So Sue's doing this, inviting them all to this Breadsticks date because she wants them to just distract Blaine and Krofsky from their date or whatever. I don't know. But the kicker...
I think it's to make Blaine feel bad about either, like, think Karofsky's a big slut or, right, like, feel, like, insecure compared to him or something like that.
Dated so much more and I've only ever dated
Kurt. I'm this little inexperienced, naive, like, either, like, ew, or, like,
where
insecurity.
Well, I mean, this isn't me saying at all, and I would never care to say that anyone was a slut, but I'm curious as to where in the timeline of when he came out of the closet properly, Krofsky would have time to date, like, 15-plus men.
15 adult men as a high school senior. I don't know.
Right, because, I mean, we're back to that whole thing where, like, are they 18 where they're in high school still? I don't know.
I assume it's just people he met at the, like, bear bar and, right, like, just saw a couple of times. Like, I don't think he was, like, long-term dating any of them.
The one guy was like, oh, yeah, we went out a couple of times. So.
Right, right.
And it was just, like, a couple of times.
And it seems to be, like, a really, like, deep and personal, incestuous group of, quote, bear club men that just seem to kind of get along with each other and just, you know, whoever wants to go with each other that night does that thing. So that's kind of the impression I got, you know. And
well, the Lima Bear scene.
The Lima Bear scene, all 15 of them. Oh, that's great. Hey, yeah, Krofsky was dancing along with him up there, right? So, and then
maybe they, like, adopted him, and they, like, maybe, right, like, they didn't actually, like, you know, all, you know, have,
oh yeah, that
sexy dates, but they, like, you know, apparently he's what's known as a bear cub. So
what the hell is that Zach Braff movie where he's playing a homosexual and he's in there with, I think, Mark Ruffalo, and they're just, like, a bunch of, like, gay friends that act like that, too. They, like, kind of date and adopt each other all in the same way in, like, a family. Yeah.
I've never heard of this movie.
I don't know about Mark Ruffalo. Yeah. I know Mark Ruffalo played a gay girl eventually. I don't know if it was in that movie.
Yeah, Normal Heart, but that's not what you're talking about.
No, it's Zach Braff, though. Check it out for me, if you could, because I want to know. Because it reminds me a lot of the situation that Krofsky's in right now, where all these bear men are kind of just like his family, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think
Something about baseball.
Yeah, I've just looked it up. It's called the Broken Hearts Club, and the poster is definitely like a baseball team.
Right.
And it's a... basically, it's an older gay guy. Oh, it's written by Greg Berlanti. Okay. Yeah, it's a group of gay friends who, like, have a softball team that they sponsor, and there's, like, an older guy that takes care of them, and, like, right, you know, yeah, a bunch of, like, different ages of, unfortunately, Mark Ruffalo is not in this movie, but, no, yeah.
I'm thinking of the Jonathan Groff movie, aren't I?
Mark Ruffalo's in The Normal Heart, which Ryan Murphy wrote, which is a gay interest film, but very, very depressing, like, absolutely really upsetting, so,
yes. Yeah, I watched a bit of that on HBO once, and it made me sad. I like to say that The Broken Hearts Club is a little bit happier, if you're looking for, if like on Glee Chat, like we often do, if you liked, just like we liked that Kristen Dunst movie you mentioned, Natalie. I feel like we're just like this nice source of like movies and literature, like Roses in the Attic and the like, you know. So,
Flowers in the Attic.
But Flowers in the Attic.
I had someone else message me being like, "Wow, I just discovered what that meant." Via
we should start like a glee chat, like not
and
just
I'm scarred, and I was just like, "Sorry about it." I saw that movie when I was like 7 years old at horse riding camp. So,
wouldn't it
yeah,
be so
sorry
much...
about my life, like.
Wouldn't it be so much fun, though, if we did, like, a Glee Chat, like, media club, not, like, a book club, so where we could, like, you know, find a reference in the in the TV show, whether direct or not, and then, you know, go off and discuss that. That would have been cute. So then there's if we're all good at that point, guys, Caitlin, did you have anything to say more about what we were going with, about the Lima Bear
scene? So let's move on to the relation.
Yeah, so there's a great... grandfather that Blaine and Karofsky share, and this
they
makes
really
them third
don't.
Cousins, is, well, whether or not they do or not, is third cousins considered incestuous? I always have thought no.
No.
Right. No, I don't...
Not a big deal.
I think it's definitely, like, not illegal. I think that it would depend on the community and how close the family was raised, whether it was considered inappropriate or not. Mm-hmm. But,
because they weren't raised as family members, right? But, I mean,
no,
couldn't you
no,
say
no.
that for...
Clearly they had
well, couldn't
no
you say the same...
It.
I guess the line you have to cross is just first cousins past that, though. Second cousins seems to be, like, maybe? I don't know.
Again, it depends if you... Like, I feel like, you know, we're not going to, like, debate the, like, various, like, legalities and ethical, you know, ideas of incest. But a lot of it... I think past first cousins is illegal... But I think that a lot of it is, like, to do with the taboo of how you were raised and whether you were raised with those people as your family, whether there's a certain dynamic that makes it inappropriate, or whether it's, like, a complete stranger, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like, whether, you know, your families act like family to each other, and I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah,
but if you look at the ancestry thing that Sue puts down on the table, Blaine's mother's name is wrong, and it doesn't have Cooper, so clearly it's not right.
I think
right.
It's fake. Like, that's the thing. I think it's faked. Like, yeah.
So it's faked, and we don't get any reveals about Blaine's family, do we? Then, like, weren't we looking
no.
for... We were looking for a couple things, though. Weren't we looking... How do you know his name? His mom's name already? Blaine's
because
mom's
she's
name.
Been
announced. She's been cast.
Right. Okay, so, hey, look at that. We're, like, looking forward to know what's not true in the present.
Yeah, I've
but
got
Cooper
like,
is also not on it, and we
and
have
we know
met
about Cooper. Like, it says, like, later on, like, you know, like, Kurt says later on, there's no way you and Karofsky are related, which is meant to be, like, some insult to Karofsky, I guess, like, it's how he intended it. But the show is never like, oh, Sue totally faked that, if you know what I mean. But I think that she probably did.
Well, she
like,
did, and this is going to be the breakup, I know.
Believed it, like...
That's it. I know that there's no more left to Blainovsky, unfortunately. And I'm saying that because we didn't get to know them past this, like, 10 seconds, like I said. And I know it's going to be the end simply because of how much of a credit Karofsky's actor was getting for this season. So,
That was a really sweet moment they had, too, like, right before Sue comes in. Like, Blaine saying that he admires Karofsky for how much he's grown as a person. Like, they
right.
seem very comfortable together. I was fine with it, which
yeah.
I was not expecting to be at all. So
I know, I know. So I mean, do you guys agree then that I mean, wasn't it just he got a 4-episode run and he's been in all his 4 episodes? I think right.
I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Does he have one more left? I mean, if anything, it's going to be the breakup. But that was the tail end. Like, I don't think we saw them in their relationship. We kind of did actually.
Please, for the love of God, please don't let it be. Like, oh, Karofsky and I broke up because it turns out we're cousins.
That's what I'm saying. I'm 90% sure.
Seriously.
If I was reading Glee
like,
at this point.
We couldn't get past the cousin thing and we
right.
had to break up. Like,
cause
it's obviously fake.
Because they're working too well elsewhere, so they couldn't write out them unless they brought up, like, an odd made-up lie.
Mm.
Right?
I mean, it could be because of, like, Blaine's reaction later on when he hears about Kurt, like, going on a... date or whatever, but you know, we'll see. I don't know, it's so dumb. I don't know. It's so dumb. But anyway.
It's either the cousin thing or it's the Walter thing that's going to really separate everything else and make Blinovsky not happen. But we finally, we found the Achilles heel, I suppose, to Blinovsky, and it's done. So, and we kind of had a moment, too, we should note, of course, when they have interactions about the bear in the apartment, that was kind of a showmanship of their relationship where it was, you know, Blaine's there to support Krofsky and will come at the drop of a dime and he'll take care of Krofsky's problems and Krofsky
will
steal.
He's like, that was cute. The one that I like that. Spiders. Like, he's clearly, you know, Blaine is the,
right,
the big man in the relationship, which is cute.
It is cute. Yeah, I know. So that's Blinovsky. Hope you all enjoyed it. Did we expect anything else? All right, so Sue visits Carmel High, and I think we went to Carmel High once, so this must have been, correct me if I'm wrong, Natalie, I feel like you would know this, that we had a set from there, and I wish I remembered.
I don't remember.
If Jack was on, he would remember if it was like the same set or whatnot, because I always wonder if they keep like,
it was literally just a wall with a banner on it, and they probably could have stuck that up on any wall on the Paramount lot. Like, I don't think it's a built set. Like,
right, yeah. Oh, in speaking of sets, there was Emma Pillsbury's during Bitch. I'm backtracking a bit. There was Emma
her moving around all of the stuff.
Right, but yeah. Rachel took over her office space for some reason. So,
no, I think Rachel took Will's office.
Was that Will's office originally? I think,
yeah,
I got the messed up.
So.
So has that always been Emma's? I didn't know. I thought that looked weird and different to me.
I guess. I don't know.
Okay, so back office sets to what happens here. So Sue's at Carmel High, and she wants to meet their principal, who turns out to be Figgins' sister, and that turns out to just be Figgins' actor wearing a fucking wig. Because
and Figgins' first name is Principal, because he's the firstborn.
Whoa.
Okay, was I the only one that was expecting, like, the other foot to drop, and that, like, Figgins was, like, that it was really Figgins, if you know what I mean? Like, that he'd applied under a fake identity because he had a bad reputation or something like that.
Oh my god, that would have been so much better.
I was there with
that's what I assumed was happening, not that, like, the actual sister of Principal Figgins was, like, stroking a picture of him in her office. Like, I assumed that it was Figgins in disguise because his own identity had a bad rap and he wanted to be a principal somewhere else. But then we see him later in the episode cleaning the frickin' chairs at McKinley. Like, I just...
Well, you know what? This is really funny that we're all unrewatchable, that I could say it reminds me of that crazy man that they meet during the Painted Lady episode that thinks he's three people. And, like, changes his wig. And that's what Figgins is doing here. Yeah, totally. Yeah, so that's what Figgins has got going on. So Mrs. Figgins, as I've dubbed her because her real name was too long, is shocked by the Will and Rachel competition-throwing conversation, and this apparently puts Will's job on the line. That's a good thing. We like that.
As it should. That's, like, you can't do that.
Yeah, seriously, I know. And it seems that Mrs. Figgins seems to have a great pride in vocal adrenaline, unlike Sue or Figgins ever really had. So, Mr. Figgins, I should say. So it's nice that at least one of the principals in this show is appreciating... One of the main principals, I guess I could say, because there was that one for the all women's school during Hairography and all that. That was really proud. Remember, she was like a really cool principal for the Glee Club. And other than that, all the authority figures seemed to hate it. So Will barges into Sue's office, and he states that his job is on the line now. And then she just decides that this is the perfect opportunity to go on a tirade against Will, citing mostly the forgotten members of the Glee Club in the past, like Rory, Joe, and Matt. I'm surprised they didn't bring up Sugar. So there was something about, like, sexual attraction to minors, I think, thrown in here, and I didn't know what kind of line that was crossing.
Yeah, borderline pederasty, which is not an unfair comment for him, honestly. Like, and it's been going on since you first, like, your obsession with the Glee Club led you to stalk a naked student in the shower.
It's oh,
like,
yeah.
It didn't have that, you know, it wasn't, but, like, the way that she said it, I'm just like, yeah, pretty much. Like, Will's obsession with making the Glee Club something, like, for him to have feelings about did lead to, like, some crazy obsession, if you know what I mean. And then what he was saying, you know, what Sue was saying about all of the things that, you know, he'd done, like, you know, like how he would, like, neglect any, you know, like he was, you know, he would focus on the underdogs while completely neglecting all of the students that were kind of not as completely melodramatically sad. And focusing on anyone can carry a tune while ignoring the real musical geniuses, the band, who can play any music at the drop of a hat for them, but you never knew their name. And Will's kind of sitting there going like, shit, all of these things are true, basically. Which I'm like, so on one hand, I'm like, yes, fucking drag him. All of that stuff is true. But on the other hand, I'm like a little, I'm a little bit pissed at the show for some of what it said, not all of it. Some of what she said was like, I'm just like, yes, I'm fist pumping. Some of what she said was too much lampshading of Glee's past, quote unquote, reality. For example, the band. Yes, it's fine every now and then to make a joke about the band. But if we're meant to believe that they were like members of the Glee Club slash people who, like students who did extracurricular stuff with the Glee Club the whole time, and that they were just ignored and not friends with them and just like treated like second class citizens, like I'm just like, that is so terrible. Like, number one, it's terrible to think that the show would do that. But number two, like I said, I felt like in the earlier seasons of Glee, whenever you'd see musicians, including the band, like Brad the Piano Guy is a whole other story because he was kind of a joke. And that's pretty standard. Like a lot of schools who have a music program have someone who works as an accompanist for the school or whatever. But the band, again, like I said, I kind of thought about them as like, the orchestra in a Broadway musical. You know that they're there, and sometimes you can even see them depending on where you're sitting, but they're not like really there, if you know what I mean. You're not meant to think of them as part of the show. And right. That's what I always thought with the background of musicians for Glee, because if you focus too much on them being real characters that got totally neglected, then it's just gross. Like, it's just nasty, basically. Totally. And so I can't believe that Sue actually made that a point. Which, on one hand, if you're going to take everything in Glee that's happened as absolute reality, it's completely fair, but it pissed me off that we're now being asked to take it as absolute reality when there's been so much ridiculousness before, and then now they're trying to, like, make excuses for all of the things that are absolute reality. I don't know. Caitlin, how did you feel about all of that?
I mean, this was another one where it was like the writers went on to Tumblr and went on to the Will Schuster tag and just took posts and threw them into Sue's mouth. Like, it was, she's very much being fandom again, and fandom by and large hates Will Schuster, so it was like every random insult we can throw at him that fandom has probably made at some point we're gonna put in Sue's mouth. So it was just, on the one hand I was like, I get you because I hate Will, but at the same time, holy crap.
Like, the band thing, for example, is the kind of thing that people on, like, Tumblr or ONTD, but most people are saying that, like, in sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek, in full awareness that, you know, we're meant to suspend our disbelief about the band, whereas this is asking you to stop suspending disbelief, and I'm like, I don't know if you can watch Glee and like it while not suspending disbelief, if you know what I mean. So you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot here by asking us to.
Yes, you've said it very aptly. And I also wanted to bring up that Brad the Piano Guy gets two shout-outs in this episode, oddly.
Oh, poor Brad the Piano Guy.
One was that he has his foot fetish, and Blaine was going to use him for something and didn't because he was so offended by said foot fetish yearbook. Scrapbook, whatever. And then Brad the Piano Guy has a collection of... I don't know if I want to remember what it was. That Will has been using for something. Some bodily fluid, we can say. Or whatever. So that was gross. And also Sue has been using her pee as some other gel that Will puts in his hair or something. And this all happened during the episode when she came in during a Christmas time, I suppose. And I'm sure that happened at one point. And I have a feeling it had something to do with something with the Grinch. I don't know. Whatever. So that was just a little bit of more ridiculousness that they threw in. Just for good measure. Why not, right? All right. As long as we're all feeling... Red as rain, all about this big, I think we can almost call this Santana against Kurt moment of the episode. We go into the actual conversation between Kurt and Blaine that that is about the upcoming date with Walter, and the two really don't seem to know how to react to it and to each other, and I wrote that they were acting in a "we know where we stand, right?" kind of a moment, and I didn't know how to feel about that because, I mean, we're not clean shippers, the three of us on, and it just made me want to understand where clean shipper would even feel this way, or where either character would feel that way. And then it even ends in, like, I rolled my eyes at this, like a goodbye kiss last minute thing that almost was a kiss, but then it turned into a hug. And I was like, oh no, oh, it's coming back. The clean is spreading.
Well, that's not the first time that's happened. When they met at Scandals, it happened again, because it was,
yeah, good point,
like muscle memory that they usually go in for a kiss when they do that. But then they're like, oh yeah, we can't do that.
Which I think I can kind of relate to that in my own life, where I think I'm sure, as a matter of fact, I've done that. It's not even like someone I've been romantic toward, but just like, I don't know, like a relative I used to be closer to, where I wanted to give them a hug and then it was a handshake because I was an adult or something like that. So, I mean, it makes sense. And but just the way they were acting toward each other was new. I don't remember that being as apparent in Scandals. I think that they were really trying to sell, they being the Glee writers, that Clane is a thing, it will come back, and they're meant for each other because they can't stop thinking about each other or something. Natalie, what are your thoughts on their conversation?
I was just pissed that apparently Blaine can have his own relationship that he's perfectly happy with, and that doesn't make him feel like any, like, sadness about Kurt. But as soon as he hears about Kurt apparently moving on, he's just like, oh, this sucks. Like, what is that? That doesn't even make, like,
I wonder if Blaine, kind of with Kurt coming back into town and, like, immediately being like, I'm gonna get you back, if he thought that Kurt was gonna fight for him more than he seems to be. Like, it seems like he gave up, and Blaine maybe wanted him to fight for him more, so it was a little like, oh, so you're not gonna keep fighting for me. Okay.
I am horrified at this thought, but I've got this feeling that, you know, if because, you know, Kurt kept saying to people, he's like, to Sue, like, come on, we don't want to get back together. But it's like, didn't you literally come back to town, like, to get him back? Like, you've accepted this, like, really, and now you've decided you don't want to get back together? Like, this just seems like completely the opposite. And now I'm worried that, like, Kurt might carry on this friendship with whoever, you know, that guy, I can't even remember his name, Walter, whatever, and that it's going to be Kurovsky and Blaine break up. And that Blaine is the one, like, begging Kurt to take him back.
Oh, now. God.
I think that's what it's going to end up in. I think Blaine is going to be the one being like, oh, a gesture. You know, you came and you said, and then I didn't, you know, let it. But now I've realized it's what I want now, and it's going to be. And now I'm worried that you're escaping, and Blaine is going to be the one with the big gesture to try and win Kurt back.
I will never forgive the show if they do that.
No. I reckon that's what it's going to be.
Sickly imagining Blaine bursting out in some sort of Moulin Rouge medley again, and it hurts me to think of the moment that I know is inevitably coming, because I think that you guys have laid it out in the same way that I've been thinking about it for a while, and it's sad. It's the dragging Clane through the mud and trying to make us like that, and it's just so stupid. There's nothing else to say other than Clane has been mistreated so horribly in this show. And not that it's only just been mistreated, but that it had stopped working a long time ago, and then they mistreated it. It sucked. When it was together, and it's looking like they're really gonna do it. They're really gonna break them back. It's gonna be clean end game, and I don't know. It's just, I don't like it. I don't like it that Sue had us do this. And wouldn't the world have been a better place? The world, not even just Glee, but wouldn't the world have been a better place if Sue was never written to have liked randomly Clane as much? If this whole episode never existed, if this whole thing was never put into motion and everyone just kind of went their own ways, I really do think the world would be more peaceful and happier. It would have been better, because it's just, we need to be done. We do. All of the fandom of Glee needs to be done with Clane. It's not going to be a healthy thing when it happens again, and they're going to try and play it off like it is, and there'll still be those underlying things that we've always called that we didn't like, so. All right, so Kurt gets semi-catfished on his date with Walter, whom Kurt thought was much younger in accordance to Walter's profile pictures. After being skeeved at for a bit, Kurt decides to give Walter a second chance on account of what they have in common, like loving the Golden Girls, I suppose. And I have to say that this actually did happen to me, very specifically, other than the fact that the person...
To you?
Yeah, they weren't... I think it was just the fact that they take better pictures and that make them look younger online, and they were current pictures, and I knew that, but just in person, details were shown of their face that showed them as being an older person with, like, you know, like a wrinkle or whatever, that I couldn't tell, but they had a really boyish look in a picture, so it was really strange. You never know, and that's why, to Kurt, I had this specific advice. I've learned my lesson. If you ever go on a date, you have to do before you do, to make sure, you know, this online person is who you think they may be or whatever, do a Skype video call. You know how to do those. You used to do those with Blaine all the time. Come on. Pick it up, Kurt. That's just stupid. And I don't know. Yeah, so. Yeah, Caitlin, how did you feel about good old Aaron Eccles / Walter coming into Kurt's life to cannibalize him?
Oh my god, now that I know that that's Aaron Eccles. I cannot look at it, okay? Like, it was extremely awkward and uncomfortable as it was.
Right.
And then now that I know this, like, I can't handle it. Right. Oh my god.
Well, I mean, like, I handled it in the same way that Kurt did. And I was just kind of like, well, this is different. And I'm going to kind of try and handle this in the same way as Kurt did. Like, I was just like, I'm shocked, but I'll give you a chance because I know we had a lot in common. But then I'm brought back to the same thing that happened with Unique and Ryder, which I suppose could be different because I'm not sure if the sexualities matched up to have that couple be together, you know, technically. That Ryder got along with Unique great when, you know, Ryder was the catfish. So it's like, why wouldn't Ryder try, you know, if we're ignoring sexualities in the same vein as Kurt's trying right now. So maybe I just answered that question myself. But Natalie, do you have any major thoughts on what's going on with this whole Walter business?
I was kind of, I guess, glad that Kurt didn't kind of dismiss him out of hand, but like, yeah, it's also kind of when he's sitting there being going, I have kids your age.
Great reaction.
for to not tell the person, like, you know, you clearly think there's something a bit wrong about it if you're not being honest about it. So, I don't know, it's not great. But Kurt is, like, a crotchety old woman in his actual heart. So... maybe it maybe yeah. This will be good. Like, you know, I would, you know, not object to I guess actually seeing a legitimate chance given here, but who knows.
I think we're gonna see a legitimate chance because Kurt didn't blow him off from the beginning, and because they had that little Golden Girls moment where they said we like that together, and then that was indicative of them getting along in as much of a television show's timing as they can show, in my opinion. So it'll be a thing for a while. It won't be endgame, I know that for sure. And I know, once again, that Clayne's going to be, and this is just going to be that distraction that we all set up and from getting back to Clayne that will get Blaine angry when he's begging back for Kurt. Oh, God. that was the third date of Breadsticks, and I just think that they're either playing that as a trope to be like, there's only one place to date someone in Lima, or they just were that lazy to not, like, build another set or, like, go anywhere else, whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
well, okay, here's what I reckon about that. Let me just tell you. I will tell you something I know about Breadsticks. The Breadsticks set is actually the dining hall at the Paramount lot. It's not a set. It is an actual place in the Paramount lot, but when they do it as Breadsticks, they have to close it off, they have to shut everyone who actually uses the dining hall to eat lunch out of there. They have to put transfers on the windows to make it say Breadsticks. They have to, like, dress it with their own set, you know, stuff. So I reckon that to do that, like, if they had to do that, they wanted to get as many scenes out of having to use that. Like, if they had to hire out that, you know, that location in the lot, and, you know, inconvenience people or whatever, they probably wanted to get as many, like, scenes done in there as quickly as possible, as opposed to just, like, to do it all for one scene and then have to do that somewhere else, like the Lima Bean, which is the Paramount Lot's real coffee shop and stuff like that. Like, they're not set sets that belong to Glee. They're actual locations in the studio. So I reckon that they were just trying to get their money's worth out of that.
Well, that's reasonable, because I can imagine that they have a much lower budget with a 13-episode run already given to them. That's kind of a slap in the face, as is, for your final season. And then to say that, right, like, you should have a certain budget, I think that they're going to work with what they have. And they probably had those actors running in and out and being like, all right, this is the current Walter scene. Do it in one take. Go! So that's funny. And, no, I have to say that it's kind of odd that Kurt thought he was, like, a waiter or something when he was just like, I'd like some sparkling wine or whatever. Because, as Caitlin and I know from Veronica Mars days, that actor didn't really look too much different. I don't know. Maybe I would recognize him. Then again, I didn't. You didn't either, Caitlin.
I didn't recognize when we saw the older,
yeah, when we saw the older version of this actor, because we're used to, like, his, I don't know, like, his late 30s version. And this time,
he
he's
also
like
had longer
50s.
Hair in Veronica Mars.
Yeah, well, his voice is what caught me. Like, I hit that, and, yeah, I was wondering also how Kurt didn't recognize that he was older from his voice, because he probably could have.
I thought that as well. He didn't sound, I mean, you know, people's voices can sound whatever, but he certainly didn't sound, young. Like,
well,
you know.
How old did Kurt think he was my question, because... what are Kurt's expectations for dating? Because, I mean, it's quite fine and all right if he's looking to date people in their 50s and to each his own, but I don't know, like, was he searching for someone in their 20s and happened to get someone in their 50s? I just, it's going to be an interesting ride. I'm really going to be interested to see how Glee decides to deal with Walter, or rather, doesn't decide to deal with Walter and just has it happen.
I mean, his dating pool is probably somewhat limited, too.
Kurt's?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, like, small town Ohio.
Yeah, and yeah.
Going online, looking for male, seeking male online in that small area, there's probably not a massive array of choices for Kurt.
Yeah, you would imagine it's so, because, I mean, if we really are to buy in the Glee fiction that this new football character is part of this new generation that is, like, gay is okay, and it's more than okay. It should be ignored because it's not really a thing anymore. You know, it makes me wonder if that spread to the whole of the community, or if that's just like that, like I was saying, that younger generation. So I like to believe that there are still a lot of closeted people in Lima, and that were of the same mindset of, you know, the school, I suppose, when Kurt was going through high school, right? So,
well, you also have, like, the segment that is gay, and then you have the even smaller segment that then goes online for dating. So it's just...
And that's interested in you.
Yeah, so, like...
Caitlin, you're preaching to the choir.
I'm just saying, like, the pool might not be super deep, so...
It, you know, it kind of was. I can kind of relate to Karofsky in an odd way now, that it was a bit... not literal incestuous, I should say now, very carefully, but it was a bit incestuous in the gay crowd in Albany, because you couldn't date someone that didn't already date your ex. Everyone knew each other. It got pretty awkward pretty quick, and yeah, there was no online dating scene there at all. I think I went throughout, believe it or not, my entire time at my undergraduate college without dating anyone, but that's neither here nor there. I can relate to Kurt is what I'm saying here. So yeah, that's a good point, Caitlin. So then we have a really cool duet with Sam and Rachel. They sing 1,000 Miles. I love that song. It is a good old classic. It's from that movie White Chicks. It's like the trope song in that movie of, like, a super girly song, and I think that kind of spread out to all of media afterwards, that whenever you want to, like, you guys know what I'm talking about when I say, like, the vines of all girly things, right?
No.
Because all girly things is, like, a Tumblr that has, like, super, like, feminine romantic things to do with your best friend, like, eat ice cream on the boardwalk, and it'll have, like, a really sepia picture of two girls doing that with, like, a frilly text. Well, people would do, like, with 1,000 Miles, they'll have that piano intro, and they'll have a vine of, like, someone, of, like, the image, and then they'll have someone doing it, and, like, make it look a lot more, like, stupid than it was. It's really funny. You guys have to check it out. This song is spurred on a lot. I don't know how you guys haven't heard any of this. Caitlin, have you?
No. Well, I just knew this song when it came out. Like,
yeah,
it was really
knew
big.
The song, but I have no idea what you're
I've only known it as,
no,
like, I did know it as when it came out, but I've known this song, like, a lot as, like, a joke or a meme song, I guess you can put it. So that's funny. Maybe someone else out there has heard of what I'm talking about, so it doesn't seem as crazy. Yeah, so I guess this is the flatbed moment. They didn't say flatbed truck, like, in the dialogue, but...
Yeah, again, it's like a dream, like Sue says, do it, and then it's actually only a dream sequence. This is very...
I know.
Confusing.
I know, yeah. So that was weird, and they kiss, but then the next day, Rachel asks Sam... Well, it's kind of like a commercial break, so we don't really see what happens, but apparently Sam ran out really quick. According to Rachel's recollection of the moment the day after. So in the hallway, Rachel asks Sam out on a date. He doesn't remember the event at all, per Sue's hypnotism. I guess that the kiss was it, and then I don't know why he'd run away, though, because it's like, there's one thing to forget something, and another to be, like, frightened and afraid that you want to run away, you know? So then, and this is a big moment for Jack, if only he was on, Sam tells Rachel that he's still not over Bay Sadie's. Sad day. Wow, you really crushed us, Glee. I didn't like that. It wasn't good. I wonder how Jack would feel about this, actually, because he's such a Sam Sadie shipper, but I'm sure he would be in the same boat of us right now. That was a horrible thing to do. So, Caitlin, how did you feel about him still being, I guess, on Mercedes?
I mean, it makes sense. When Mercedes came back in the beginning, he asked if she was, "What, are you still a virgin or something?" Like, he was still clearly interested. So that doesn't surprise me. I'm so upset for Rachel.
I know. Oh, and well, before I move on from you, Caitlin, do you have any thoughts about the performance of A Thousand Miles itself?
It's just so awkward. And the piano playing was so fake.
I know.
So fake. Like, there was a bit that showed their hands, like, just the hands, and I'm like, that the man hands are so hairy compared to Cordova Street's arms. So hairy. Not that I have a problem with a hairy arm with a man, but
that's just not him.
This is not Cordova Street's arm, like, so obviously.
Not his arm, painful. Yeah. That was good. I didn't notice that. I'm going to look back at that now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute, because it's a really fast-paced song, and it seemed like
they were adorable together. Those two have really great chemistry, and they were super cute. The just, like, mechanics were awkward.
Well, there was this one moment that... it was just, like, the chemistry was so, like, tangible, I swear I could taste it, that Rachel's just like, I can't play this piano, et cetera, and Sam just like, some things don't make sense, like lizards' tails that get cut off and still move. And then she just has this cute little, like, reaction where she's just like, what? And I'm just like, oh.
Oh, he was so cute when he was, like, having her, like, play keys on his hands. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so cute. I could not handle how cute they were. It just makes it even more upsetting.
It does. And it seems so genuine. It didn't seem hypnotized. So once again, I really do feel like Sue used the Imperius Curse or something to that effect on Sam, because she didn't really give him that specific of instructions, right? She just said, make Rachel Berry fall in love with you. And he did a pretty good job of it.
Yeah.
Oh, it was crushing. Cute. Natalie, do you have thoughts about the song?
It was, no, not really. It was, I voiced my confusion about it being like...
rushing through town on the...
Well, yeah, on the flatbed truck in a
green
sequence.
They didn't show the truck, so like, I just thought that they were floating around. I think in the music video, maybe she even does that, the original artist. I think she just floats around on the magic piano around town.
I don't know, but it was weird to me, so I...
They had pretty harmony. You can say that they melded well together.
I think they sounded okay. It was nice, etc.
I know.
Don't know.
Yeah, I was.
Plotline is dumb. Like.
Well, the only thing is that this was the only song of the show, because Sue's wasn't really like a song to be performed. It was more to be acted, and this one was more of like to show off vocals. And the last two that we'll get into in a bit, where show songs, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so. And they were very spoken as well,
right,
which I was surprised by. But anyway, yeah, carry on.
All right, so then, for some reason, Sue did not have her kicks yet. She decides that she wants to hypnotize Sam again. And this time, I suppose it could be of note that we're seeing the outside of Will's house and Will's car. I'm sure someone out there cares about that. And that Sam is stealing Will's mail with a screwdriver to take his bills from his quote-unquote condo And I don't know if that's supposed to be his current house or he bought a new one or whatever. And that he's doing that so that Will's life will be miserable because he can't pay his bills on time or something like that.
Well, that's what I thought originally. I'm like, oh, you're going to get him into debt trouble. But right. No, apparently what it was is that they wanted Sue hypnotized him to make him to get caught so that Will would hate Rachel. But well, I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh, are you trying to get, like, Will Schuster into, like, crazy, like, you know, bad credit debt or something?
Natalie, I think we're still right, because it seems like Sam still has some kind of, like, control over his actions to the point where he said, I got messed up with AIM and PM. I was supposed to come at night, so you didn't see me. So he was trying to put... Well, Sue was trying to put Will in debt there. And I think that it just kind of happened the way it did. And it happened to be better for Sue that it ended up... Well, it's just weird because, like, Sue never told Sam, at least on screen, and say Rachel sent you to do it. You know? It just... So that part was weird. It's just very weird how that turned out, wasn't it?
I don't know. Caitlin, what do you reckon? Because I'm now very confused.
Yeah, I had read it as... She had hypnotized him to go get it to get Will into financial trouble, but yeah. His response to Will about Rachel seemed very specific.
Yeah.
It yeah. Did.
Like, that's not something Sam would come up on his own.
No.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's something that occurred off screen.
And I also have a feeling that we're not done seeing the Sam hypnotism plotline, once again, in this being a two-parter, because that just seemed like... Very random. I don't know. It just felt like there was going to be more. That wasn't the conclusion to that hypnotism plotline, you know? She hadn't failed in using him yet, and she had to fail, in my mind, for that storyline to really, like, fulfill its arc. So since she's been so successful in getting away with it, one of these times someone's going to catch it and just realize what's going on or something. Like, someone has to, because why else would Sam just be so involved if not only acting so weird in all these situations? Someone's bound to catch on, right?
Yeah, she's just like, it's so weird. I don't understand.
I
know.
I was expecting Rachel to, like, follow Sue in after she had that weird, like, she kind of recognized that Sue went behind her. Like, yeah. I was half expecting Rachel to, like, storm into the locker room and catch Sue hypnotizing Sam.
Well, that was another
maybe
moment
next
that
next week. I don't know.
Maybe it's next so week. But weird. That was another moment that I felt like a lot of horror. It really did. That felt like a freaking horror show. It almost creeped me out. Because it's just, like, the look Rachel had in her face was perfect.
Her, like, zooming by behind.
Right. Yeah. It was great. Yeah. I really liked that a lot. And also, I remember now specifically another shot. There were just, like, ones that stuck out so much. I'm so upset that no one else found that. That when Sam's getting first hypnotized, there's that famous shot from Jaws where the camera pans out, but it zooms at the same time. So as it's tracking backwards, you zoom in and it creates the background to move away while the person moves closer into the focus, if you know what I mean. And that one is in that one I love for when it's done right. And I'm not sure if Glee necessarily did that, but I really don't know what they're meaning to get by with that shot. But there were just some random shots out there, and I'm hoping that I'm right out there and that there's something weird going on with, like, Walter or that Sue called it, right? You know, so I don't know. I really do think it's not a crackpot theory. I think it's something for real this time. All right. So then at the actual invitational, this is great. Oh, tell me you guys didn't just applaud to your television when Will goes, all right, vocal adrenaline, I want you now to perform your best. All right, who's ready? Show choir circle. I guess I'll learn that one later.
I wanted to, like, you know, I wanted to, like, watch from behind my hands at how fucking awful that's, like, I loved they hate him so much. I love that they're just like, we don't like you, like, leave us alone.
And main vocal adrenaline guy was the one, he's the one from The Wanted or whatever band, right?
Yeah,
he had a couple lines.
I think so. But I don't know The Wanted, really. But just how much they hate him. Like, I love that, like, so much. And he probably doesn't treat them, like, very well. Like, I don't know, he tries, but, like, it's just fail, like, clearly. But, yeah, I was just so embarrassed for him. Not that I, like, didn't want to be, like, I just can't handle secondhand embarrassment, even if I, like, hate the person. And I was just so, like... I was so glad that they hated him, but I was still so embarrassed for him that it made me feel, like, so awkward and terrible.
amazing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It made my skin crawl. I was just like, if I was there and I was doing that in that moment, I would have just died of embarrassment. I don't know if I would have survived that moment. So then, apparently, after, like, you know, these girls in, like, their awesome beehive hairdos are just kind of, like, all snarky to him, and one of them's like, are you bipolar? Get out of here. So these kids are owning this, like, adult, and they don't even care, because they're so 100%, million percent done with Will Schuster's shit, as we all are. It's like, if the show knows that we don't like him that much, why do they write him more plots? Like, it's to the point where I feel it's lampshaded that every character in the show hates Will, but they still put him in things. He shouldn't even be on the show anymore. They don't have any trouble writing off any of those 2.0s, but Will will stay on, of course, right? So, yeah, and these vocal adrenaline performers follow suit with two extremely killer performances as far as specifically show choir performances, you know, are judged, and Will's giving Rachel the stink eye during the whole of Rock Lobster and Whip It as Sue watches on in amusement. So I want to pick apart these moments first off with, of course, like I was saying, Will giving Rachel the stink eye, and she's looking at him like, what?
What did I do?
I know. And I'm just like, oh, he's going to get it. Rachel's going to freaking own him. I can't wait. I know. Caitlin, you're, once again, not only are you the least fan of Clayne, I know for sure you're the least fan of Will. How did the scene make you feel?
Caitlin, the famous hater. I know that's how you want to go down in history.
Can I go down as, like, the Blade lover? Like, right.
I'm
very upset.
I'm sure to mention that some more, I guess.
Mitch, have you put the document up for rewatchable yet?
No, not yet.
You don't? I've been waiting for 6 months to pick Hello Zuko here.
I know you have.
I cannot let these people take it from me. Put it up right now and let me put it in.
Oh my god.
Just write it in. Write it in for me when you write the doc. Just put it under my quote for that sake.
Holy shit.
It
looks like this is getting vicious.
Sabotage.
Oh my god.
I've been waiting so long. Sorry, I was just thinking about other things that Caitlin loves and how what she might want to go down in history for, and then I got thinking about Hello Zuko here.
Sorry. I do love Zuko a lot, it's true.
Oh, yeah, God,
sorry.
Past Zuko and all things not Glee, let's talk some Rock Lobster. So that was the first song, yeah. I believe. Rock Lobster was more than just talky, it was just kind of vocally. It was like, muh!
Well, yeah, that's what it is. Like, that's what the right. song is. And I don't know why they picked these two songs, except that they're both sort of from the same era and, mm-hmm. like, very, like, performative. But, like, neither of them are like, oh, I'm singing real good. So, like, I don't know, maybe that guy from The Wanted can't sing. I don't know. Like, don't kill me, like, fans of The Wanted. I don't know if he can sing or not. Like, but they gave him two very, like, talky songs. So I don't know.
You know what's freaking weird? He has, like, millions of Twitter followers. And I was like, I've literally never heard of you. There are cast members in this Glee show that I feel are more important and popular in pop culture that have less followers than you. It makes no sense to me. I don't get it.
I have heard of him, of The Wanted, but only because they like shot themselves in the foot by like, okay, here's the thing. Let me lay you guys out with a little bit of information. In the last couple of years, in the last 3 or 4 years, you'd be familiar with the global phenomenon of One Direction, I assume.
Never heard
and
of them.
You might have heard of them, like, just maybe. Something that happened in the music industry to do with One Direction is very interesting to me, is that basically if you shit-talk One Direction, you will have no career, basically. And it's not like they have, like, ninjas that come out and get you, but it's like people don't like you to do it. Basically, like, everyone who works with One Direction, everyone who interviews them, even if they're like a really cool, like, indie artist, like if they meet them at an awards show, everyone really likes them. And people who try to, like, make a feud or be like, oh, we're not like One Direction, we're cool or whatever, like, people basically it's, you know, there's stopped being a stigma about you know, oh, this is lame, or, you know, oh, this is whatever, oh, we're so much edgier, like, oh, we don't have time for that kind of thing. Everyone who's, like, associated with One Direction in a positive manner who weren't very big before have become massive. And everyone who has tried to, like, shit-talk One Direction have completely killed their own careers. And that's what happened with The Wanted. The Wanted tried to basically make some sort of, like, feud with One Direction. And One Direction were like, no. And then basically there was some sort of joke. Basically, like, a member of The Wanted, I don't believe it was this member of The Wanted, another member of The Wanted tried to basically was going on Twitter and, like, talking shit to a couple of the guys in One Direction using some really nice homophobic language. And now The Wanted have no career because they basically, like, they were big for a while, but now they've broken up because their continuing career flopped so badly because they were trying to be, like, they're another boy band. Like, they're not, like, an instrument band. They're a boy band with a backing band. But they basically shot their careers in the foot by starting a feud with One Direction and therefore losing all of their fans because literally no one is cool with people shit-talking One Direction anymore, it's, like...
How in the hell does this guy, I don't even know his name, the leader of The Wanted or the ex-wanted, the unwanted, how does he have such a big following still? Does everyone just forget to unfollow, I suppose? Or
they were big, but, like,
I never heard a single by them that I could recognize right now and say, that's The Wanted. Like, I couldn't do that. Like, for instance, I could do that for Meghan Trainor if I had to. Or, you know, like...
They did one... They have had one song that was on Glee.
Glad You Came.
Yeah, Glad You Came, which was done by the Warblers.
Just seem to have a very generic sound to my brain. I don't know. I'm not trying to shit-talk them in my own right. I'm just trying to say, I sincerely do not know who The Wanted is. And it seems to be such a big deal that this actor's on the show. And I do not care. I don't even know. I'm like, what? What? It's a thing?
Okay, yeah. They had, like, they were big for a general band, if you know what I mean. Like, they were big, like, yeah, but they were not as big as One Direction. And their own, like, you know, attempt to basically try and make themselves bigger / cooler / a feud with One Direction. Basically, if you sort of team up with One Direction and become people that they are, like, liked by, if you know what I mean, then all of their fans will follow you and support you. If you are, like, how many people has he got following? 1.13 million. That's not that many. Harry Styles has, like, literally 20 million, like, or something like that. Like, it's not that much. Like, Darren Criss probably has more or the same amount of followers as this guy, if you know what I mean. So he's not massive, but he's like they're not massive, but they started out on about the same level as One Direction, and they are now dead because they tried to get success by a feud with One Direction as opposed to, like, being buds with them. Right. And they lost all of their fans because of it, because... Yeah, 23.4 million followers has Harry Styles, 1.3 million followers has Max from The Wanted. So, yeah, it's not that much. It's a lot.
I didn't know they were split up. Did they? So, that's so weird. I mean, well, I feel we're becoming The Wanted podcast, and that's definitely unwanted amongst all
of
us.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care. Caitlin, do you have any thoughts about this? But I just wanted to drop some knowledge about
Wanted. That was very knowledgeable. I appreciated knowing it because, I mean, per usual, you seem to know a lot about the inner workings of the music industry that I hadn't been familiar with before. So I appreciated that. Caitlin, I don't know if you're a big fan of this guy or not, or their songs or whatever. I know the Warblers did one of their songs, so I guess that's a thing.
My boy band love goes back to the 90s. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Well, I guess that's the last we'll talk about that unwanted guy, because we do not want him anymore. How many times can I make that pun?
I just want to check if I have to hate him, like, to see if he's the one who did the bad on Twitter.
He must be the leader or whoever. I don't know.
I think it's not. No, I think he's not the one that was, like, gross. Like, really, like,
right,
calling them, like, fags and stuff. Like, it's not this guy. So, well, we don't have to hate this guy.
Okay.
But
We'll keep him in our medium wanted crowd.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. And, you know, another thing is, too, as I always like to try and pay attention to the Glee account in particular, who they retweet and whatever or not. he got attention, as did the guy who's playing the new gay football character that I've already forgotten the name of, which I found out.
Yeah, Marshall Lewis Spencer or whatever.
Right, because he's not in the episode, and he's like, thanks for watching, and I'm like, wow, you weren't in. And then, also, I remember a retweet going out that was something like, did you recognize other members in Vocal Adrenaline? And I have a feeling that there are, like, little Broadway actors peppered throughout this group that we just wouldn't recognize unless we knew them from specific shows or something like that.
I don't know. I didn't see that. I'd be curious.
Yeah, I'll have to find out where... I'll have to find that tweet again, because I'm curious to, like, go and look and see who... Maybe even if they're credited somewhere, because, they were a very talented group. They impressed me back to the songs with Rock a Lobster and Whip It. And as they went, you know, from one into the other, it's kind of hard to separate them in my mind other than those very specific red, I guess they look like wedding cakes they put on as dresses or something. That's
well, that's what I was going to say. Like those hats, like that shape, the, those cones, like those red cone things.
Right.
Are the iconic, like, the boys were wearing hat versions of it, and they are, like, a famous, like, pop culture icon of this band, like, Devo, who did it, who did the song. I'm going to send you a picture. Yeah. And these were, they wore them in the video. I don't know if they wore them, like, everywhere, but it was, like, I can't even think of, like, another band that has, like, something like this that's comparable. Like, but it's, like... Hang on, Mitch, I'm going to put this picture for you in the group.
Okay.
But yeah, it was definitely like a costume that they were sort of famous for wearing in at least the music video for this, if not at all times. If you know
what I mean. Okay. Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, it almost kind of reminds me of like the iconic pointy cone boobs of Madonna that they used in... whatever movie that was with the witches, my God, Hocus Pocus. Like, I could recognize that anywhere kind of deal. So that's cool that they harkened back to that specific little thing. And I don't
they
know.
They couldn't do this song without doing this, I think. Like, they would have to, like, use these hats, like, or that image for this song.
Well, one moment in the song of Whip It that caught me odd. I just didn't understand why the men had their shirts ripped off in such a hypersexual way to be like, we're the hot boy band and you're nothing. Was that just all it was meant to be? Like, they just had, like, it was a big moment to have all the men, after the ladies put on their little dresses, to have their shirts ripped off and to reveal, like, a one-tone shirt, which doesn't seem to match the picture that you showed me, Natalie, of the original.
Oh, I don't know. They clearly just needed an adaptable costume. I liked that they had a rip-off costume. That's very, like, real-life show choir, apparently. According to our Roxanne days, she told a lot of stories about, like, having to, like, have, like, three layers of costumes on for a big, like, 12-minute number where you, like, ripped it off and came back to do the next part of the song in a different number.
Yeah, and that's why I found these two performances really interesting, because outside of the plot themselves, they had a really good show choir feel, which we don't get a lot of anymore in Glee, because we simply don't have a show choir to showcase anymore. And now that we do, it's Vocal Adrenaline, and somehow Will did that, and somehow he taught them that and told them to be bad, and then they switched a little button in their brains that said be good again, as in perform well. I don't know, that was weird.
I get the impression that Vocal Adrenaline is a well-oiled machine, and it really wouldn't matter.
Will.
Yeah, they would be good.
Like, the senior
if
members are just there
or whatever. Like,
right.
Will is expendable.
Like, they're still from the Shelby days, like, passing on their knowledge and wisdom, and I'm sure Jesse helped them out a lot. And now it's just Will here, and they're just like, oh my God, can we get those two back, please? That's funny. Okay, yeah. So as long as no one else has thoughts on anything in particular with these two songs and the stink eye Will is giving Rachel, I suppose that's the episode recap. Anyone else have final thoughts? Caitlin?
The warblers who were, like, crying.
Oh, that was cute. Yeah, I know.
Blaine watching, like, through his fingers, like, that is going to be the most useful reaction gif, like, ever.
That would, yeah. And how about when they're warming up and the camera is really close on the first one in the opening of the shot, and they're just like, I'm not going to make the noise as loud, but they're like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, that's a realistic thing. I would think I would see it like some kind of choir competition. That's a good feeling. I feel like I'm in this, but yeah, I mean, that was only the first half of the performance. And as the next week on Glee showed, we're going to see
the rest
more
of the competition. Like,
well, you don't seem too happy about that, Natalie, but I was kind of happy by that, because I feel that before we've had half performances like this, that'll end the episode. Maybe there's like been one or two. I wish Jack was on. And then there wouldn't be the final performances of everyone else, and I would be sad that we missed out. But how come you don't want to see the rest?
Well, I do, but like, I guess if we have had to have this episode, I guess we have to have a follow-up. But I don't know, man. I'm just not like...
Well, what's the plot going to be of the Hurt Locker 2? Is it just going to be more, like, Sue's stupidity? Is it just going to continue on in the same vein?
It looks very Klein-centric.
Really?
Well, based on the promo, it's like Sue...
Oh, I haven't seen the
There's
promo.
A moment, I think, where they're just
Sue
like...
Sue locks them in a fake elevator to try and make them work their problems out.
And Rachel files a missing persons report on them on the phone, in one little clip, and... I don't know. It was weird. And then Kurt was just like, this isn't an elevator. It almost started to feel like Saw. This is a horror show, I'm telling you. It's going to freaking end in someone dying. Holy shit. Walter's going to break in and kill Blaine. I don't freaking know. Anyways, it's going to be batshit insane, that's for sure. If this is a build-up, if this batshit insane episode was the build-up, the next episode would be gargantuanly insane. I'm not going to
Is
even...
it the same, like, writer, I wonder? Like,
I know.
Same, like, yes. Like, going from point, like, they wrote it as a whole,
oh, no.
A full piece.
They're both
like...
Ian Brennan episodes.
No.
He smokes the crack, I swear to God. Oh, sorry, Jesus. Ian Brennan. If you're listening, but your episodes are always the freaking weirdest, just saying.
Did he do Puppet Master? Please tell me he did Puppet Master.
I don't know. Puppet Master was at least like, well, like
that was good Glee crack.
It made sense good in Glee the crack. Context of the
this
show.
Was not good Glee crack.
Ian Brennan's episodes are often like they do stuff that makes no sense with the rest of the, like, they're just as crazy as possible, and they do stuff that makes no sense with the rest of the continuum, I guess, of Glee. It was not written by, Puppet Master was not written by him. But, yeah, Ian Brennan, the episodes that he's written are always, like really weird, very Sue-centric, because he created Sue, that's his sort of big contribution to the show, is that he invented Sue. And so they're often very Sue-centric in a cray-cray way.
I'm not sure if I like that. I'm not sure if I appreciate that anymore. At one point in time, I probably was really appreciative of the fact that Sue existed in the Gleeverse, and that's definitely, once again, in the first 13. But I don't know if I ever could ever feel happy about, like, yes, that was a Sue plotline. That was good. I'm happy because of that, you know?
Whew. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's getting a bit much now, but
and
yeah.
I mean, I was here last season, I felt this way, so I'm glad everyone else is kind of catching up to where I was, because I think you guys were kind of eyeing me a bit. You're like, why do you care that much about what Sue's doing? And now I'm just like, finally, you see? The dots connect. All right, so then we have one quick news piece that, and I'm going to read this really... this really funny title that Andrew Sims wrote up for our website, because I just think that it speaks nothing to what actually the story is about. And it sounds like something like E! News would write. He wrote his title, Glee alum Melissa Benoist goes blonde for CBS's Supergirl. Like, the fact that she goes blonde is more important than the fact that she was finally cast as a lead in a show and as freaking Supergirl. Hello! Oh my god! Caitlin, holy freaking shit, how excited are you?
I am so excited.
You have another freaking Glee alum.
Glee
superheroes.
I love it. I am so happy for her.
Like, oh, yeah. She's getting...
I love her so much. So I'm really happy for her.
If saying just desserts was a good term, she's getting her just desserts, you know? She's... Goddamn, I was so pissed off that they didn't bring her back. She is such a talent. Oh, my God. So I'm so happy for her. That's just fabulous. I just can't wait to check out the pilot. I loved her so much. And maybe Wonder Woman will sing this time. That'd be kind of cool. Or Supergirl. I don't know the difference. I'm sure there is one.
Supergirl is
big
the depressive Superman.
Oh, no!
Yeah. They're from different planets.
I'm sure I'm not the only one that's going to make that mistake, much like the Alanis Morissette thing that we did before.
Supergirl's a little more of a household name, I think.
Why do I think Wonder Woman with, like, the W on her chest and, like, I mean, are they both DC Comics, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's confusing. I had to look
Wonder Woman is an Amazon, and Supergirl is Kryptonian. She's Superman's cousin.
Really? So is she blonde in the comics, I'm assuming?
Yes, that's why
Right.
The whole hair thing was right. Thing.
Yeah, yeah. Wonder Woman is the most famous lady superhero of DC, but she's a total different, right. like, oeuvre. Not that I'd care, because I don't know anything besides that about DC. Yeah. I haven't watched any of the current DC shows. Caitlin, do you know if this one is going to be actually fitting into the, like, Warner Brothers DC universe that allegedly has a continuum, like Arrow and Flash? Like, will she be able to meet those people?
I cannot remember if they said they are going to. It is being created by the same people, and CBS... partially owns the CW, so there is a lot of ways that it could happen, but I feel like I heard at one point that they're not gonna do it, but it would make sense to me to do it.
Like, to keep everything within the same, like, universe that they can cross over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it works really well with Arrow and The Flash. The crossovers they've had have been phenomenal, so I think it would be really fun, and it's because it's all the same people who are behind it, they would keep a real sense of continuity in doing it.
I've never seen an episode of either, but I literally laugh every time that you rewatch the episodes and hashtag it Flaro. So now you'll have to hashtag it Flaro Girl.
Oh, guys! Oh, my God! Perfect top comment on the Hypeable story. This is from someone that says their name's Therese, and they write, I have to watch this because I really loved her on Glee. She's no longer holding out for a hero. She found one in herself. Oh, my God.
Oh, that... I've been rewatching that number, like, over and over.
Oh, my God. Was that her and Kitty when Kitty was being horrible?
Yeah, when they had to be the superheroes, yeah.
I think she, like, barfed right before that performance from Kitty or something, so I have negative memories of that song. Yeah, we should say, yeah, this is Marley, for anyone who doesn't know Melissa Benoist.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably important. So that's cool, and I'm really happy for her. And let me see if the story gives me any date. Anyone know of one yet?
They haven't filmed a pilot or anything yet.
So. Okay.
Well, obviously, because she was just cast. But
I'd have to imagine that this is fall 15.
Yeah.
Definitely, because they're going to want to premiere. I mean, CBS doesn't have any superhero shows, though.
So no, CBS skews older than a lot the other networks, so it's interesting that they're choosing a superhero show for it.
Well, it's not even just the fact that they're choosing a superhero show, but the fact that they've cast what I guess she's from her looks, a younger actress for a role in a show on an older network, because you would assume that they would cast only, you know, actors in, like, their 30s or 40s or whatnot. She looks like she's still in her 20s.
Yeah, I mean, from what I know about CBS is they don't have, like, primetime, like, teenage shows. Like, that they're all, like, you know, comedies about, like, or whatever, about, like, people in their 20s and, like,
Jemma Maze was on
or crime drama.
Yeah.
Wasn't Jemma Maze on a CSI CBS show?
And then comedies.
It was this horrible, like, comedy show that Jemma Maze was, like, a supporting actress on it, and that's why she hasn't been on Glee for a while, and it was about two parents being horrible to each other. It was a bad show, and I felt bad that she wasn't on Glee for it. It was worse than Glee. So, yeah, I guess that this is probably the start of where we're going to get all of the casting announcements for everyone else that used to be... I mean, for Melissa's case, I'm not sure, but, you know, big on Glee. Like, you know, I wasn't on horribly for the last episode to announce my excitement for Scream Queens with Lea Michele, Ariana Grande. Abigail Breslin is not Random John. She is still relevant, no matter what you say about her being a Little Miss Sunshine, and that's it. So that's going to be fun, and I had to say that because I was so pissed off when he said that randomly. I'm like, no, Abigail Breslin was just in this awesome movie with Halle Berry. It was great. So anyways, long story short is, yay for Glee cast members. I hope that they all go on to awesome things. And who knows? This is going to be fun. It's going to be like, you can follow the Glee chat hosts, where they go next. I mean, John just started a new podcast, guys. Did you guys notice that?
Oh, yeah.
What's
we'll
it called?
We'll let him talk about that on the next episode.
I know, but I at least want to plug the name so he can tell us more about it in the end. What is it called?
I don't know what it's called.
I just had to like it because he sent me, like, the like invitation for it. Well, he'll tell you more about that, guys, but yeah, so I'll leave that for him, but I guess we're all going to move on from Glee eventually. All right, so we have some listener feedback, and it came from our Facebook page, first and foremost. So actually, Caitlin, would you mind taking the comment that we posted, and then the first comment?
All right, so we asked on the Facebook page, do you have a favorite episode of Glee Chat, and tell us the number and title below and why you loved it. And Cassie Jackson said, the first Halloween episode never fails to make me laugh.
Yes. Caitlin, do you remember that episode, listening to it?
I don't remember it. Sorry.
Natalie and I could never forget it. I know we've already
rehashed John this. Had a soundboard of Halloween sounds that made many appearances throughout the episode. So that was fun.
Yeah, it was pretty fantastic, I gotta say. And then, Natalie, take the next comment if you would.
Yeah, someone said, Haley Van... I think it's Van Heck, given my knowledge of... I'm going to go out on a limb. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe your name is Dutch. I think that's a Dutch name. But I love the recent flashback episode you guys just did when you talked about rumors. It reminded me what a good episode it was, and I went back and rewatched it after I finished the Glee Chat episode, and it reminded me what it is about Glee that I love so much. Mm. Well, that's good, because that's why we were doing the flashbacks as well. Good.
To remind
us that we actually do like this show.
And then maybe...
Okay, can we go around and just say, like, everyone, like, to end on a positive note, like, what was your, like, favorite moment from this episode? Like, does everyone have, like, an actual moment that they like?
Well, before you go into favorite moment, I have one more surprise comment that I didn't think to check the Hypeable post. And I need an explanation for it before we can move on, because I'm just confused. I wasn't on the last episode. I listened to it, though. Someone just wrote, Allison L. wrote, let's just take a moment to talk about all the new piano players. And they certainly couldn't have been talking about the new episode because they wrote that 4 days ago. So,
because Brad wasn't in the one and two.
Yeah, and there was just different people in the choir room playing or whatever, playing piano.
All right.
I don't know where. And, like, again, like, you're just meant to pretend these people don't exist. So, like, when Sue was trying to make them exist, it was very confusing.
Okay, so then, yes, I agree. Positive notes are good things. I'm going to go ahead and just take one I know no one else is going to. So that's why I know I'm good to go first. It was my 1,000 Miles duet. That was sweet. I loved them floating through the town on their magical flatbed truck piano. That was great.
It was cute. It was nice. And I think you're right about the, I think you're right about the, that moment being like the video, like that she has that sort of thing. I can't remember though.
I know. I have to rewatch that. Mm. So Natalie, what's your favorite moment?
Oh no, let Caitlin go.
Okay, Caitlin.
I'm going to pick a Blaine moment, obviously. I liked when Rachel and Kurt asked him to throw the competition. He's like, oh, no. Nope. Like, the way he does that, and just kind of looking between, like, nope. Like, cracked me up. Loved it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was fun. Natalie, what's yours then?
I think that mine was Kurovsky on the chair. I really and his, I really like, as much as stupid as that scene was, I think that was my favorite moment of his, and also Sam and the piano keys in the hands and the playing and the teaching was really cute.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a really good moment that could show that maybe, like, instead of Rachel and Kurt, like, that if the Glee Club is going to stay at this school and we're going to get rid of Will, though I don't think that we are because of his statement to Sue, like, I'm going to make sure that the Glee Club stays at this school long after you retire. It's like, yeah, he's clearly going to come back and take it over again because, like, vocal adrenaline are soulless. But if we were to have a student actually take over the Glee Club, I think that, like, Sam would actually be really good at it. So, yeah.
And Sue's about to retire, it seems. So, I mean, that leads
allegedly.
Up. Yeah, allegedly. I don't know. But that's a good thing, too. See, there's a lot of positivity going around still. We'll have no more Sue in the future. Yeah. All right.
Yay.
Happy-go-lucky Glee Chat ending. Ready, set, go. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's great.